Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
From Buck Cherry, the final song on their new release, Black Butterfly. Remember, you can pick it up starting on Tuesday, September 16th. Look for Buck Cherry on the road touring alongside Avenged Sevenfold. This has been Buck Cherry Inside Black Butterfly. Thanks for listening.
101.1 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone and talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the broadcast. Jalene Jordan is with me as usual. Hi, Jalene.
Hi, Peter.
What awards have we won? They always say the award-winning Night Call show.
It's, what was that, Democratic Media Award?
Oh, yeah. We're on the air? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's right.
We
it's on my website.
Year.
Yeah, we win that, and there's been a couple of Metro Times Best Of Awards. That's right.
We are award-winning. Come on.
We are award-winning. I just forgot. I blanked out on it. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And thanks to all of you for tuning by. And we're a talk show. We talk about stuff.
Yeah.
Just about everything.
There's a lot of stuff to cover.
Yeah. 313-298-WRIF.
It's 313-298-9743.
And if you're just tuning in maybe for the first time, why are we giving those numbers? Because you call and we put you on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah. We give our very strong opinions. And you can do likewise.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you do every week. And there are some strong opinions out there about what's going on in the elections.
Yes.
There?
And I think, you know, people probably, this is the second week in a row I did that. I printed off some stories of breaking news. And with all this stuff about the elections, are we going to be able to, I'm going to take that back. Are they going to be able to resuscitate the financial system? I mean, everything is going down the drain. Lehman Brothers may face failure, as Merrill Sale reported. So you go, what the hell is that all about?
I know.
Let's see, the ruptured U.S. financial system. Can we repeat that again? This isn't a mainstream Reuters news account. The ruptured U.S. financial system. What the hell has happened? Couldn't be anything about the last 8 years, could it?
Really? And no matter what side you're on, if you're a Democrat or Republican or way further left as we are or whatever you are, there's no denying that it is a ruptured system.
Yeah. And they're facing an unprecedented, rather, the financial system is facing an unprecedented shakeup on Sunday that was expected to lead to the failure of Lehman Brothers. This is this enormous financial system that was begun in 1850. I mean, this is 158. Thank you. Yeah, 158 years old, and it's just going down the tubes. Last year, the CEO, another one of these, the brightest and the best guys, took home $22 million for the wonderful work that he did with Lehman Brothers in 2007. I wonder how much.
I love how you say that.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's probably only going to get about $8 or $9 million this year.
Right?
They're going to
poor baby.
Yeah. Let's see. Fed moves to deal with financial crisis. The Federal Reserve announced late Sunday several steps to cope with the worst credit crisis in decades, including broadening the types of assets that investment banks can put up to get emergency loans from the Fed. You know, most of us don't even know what the hell it's all about. So we have a financial system that's run by these elites, and they always yak about the free market system or the market system. And there's only one thing. Remember, I've said this 100 times if I said it once. There's only one aspect of the economy that the elites really want on the free market, and that's our wages, because then we're in competition with all the rest of us here in this country, and of course increasingly with countries, with workers in countries across the world. But when it comes to their ass, they've got the government involved right away. When your dad or you or your grandfather or whoever, they start to go out of business, it's just TS, right?
Right. And what about, you know, why don't they bail all these people out who are in foreclosure?
Oh, come on. Yeah. It's just absolutely amazing. And so here is what we're stuck with, this passive emotion of hope. I mean, I know there's a candidate that uses that, but I don't want to be stuck with hope, because it's like, you're getting married, or your daughter's getting married or something like that on Saturday or Sunday, and you're hoping it doesn't rain. Well, it's sort of the same thing with this. You know, you're hoping that the whole, boy, the things I can't say and not want to say, the whole S house is going to go down the drain, right? And we're hoping that it doesn't. We're hoping that these big rich guys that always talk in a manner that we can't even understand. And I know I'm on the radio. Jolene's on the radio. We're supposed to understand this fully. Right? I know that it is a house of cards. I'm surprised it hasn't all collapsed before. And hopefully they're going to scurry around with their tens of billions and bail us out. Not them. I'm not talking about them. That's a sure thing. They're always going to take care of themselves, even during the Depression. That happened. What I care about are you and me. What's going to happen to the value of our dollar? What's going to happen to those of us that have any savings? What's going to happen to our retirement funds and our 401ks? What's going to happen to our standard of living here? I mean, these are the guys that told us, hey, don't worry, we're in control.
Yeah.
It's really frightening. And, but, you know, what happens then? Then there's all these diversions. Does Sarah Palin own 7 pair of $375 glasses?
Yes.
She does. What are those called? What's the brand, you know?
I don't know the brand. You can buy them right up the street in Birmingham. Michigan, that is, for those listening outside of the listening area. And apparently this eyeglass store, the owner said he's never, ever had a request for glasses that were like any celebrity.
Really?
Yeah, and this is the first time.
Do I have glasses like hers?
Well, yours are more round. Hers are square.
Oh, okay.
Or what? Hers are rectangular.
Right. Yeah. What are these? Oh, yeah.
Those are kind of ovalish.
But these are the ones that that don't have any frame around it.
Right.
So all there are is what they call the temples. Most everybody knows that. The piece that goes back around your ears. A little thin piece of metal.
Titanium. Right?
And then there's the nose piece.
The bridge.
Yeah. So there's nothing even around the plastic. It's not even glass anymore.
Right.
They're not. Yeah. I'm wearing plastics instead of glasses. And I hate to tell you, these actually retailed for $2.25.
Yeah. Yeah, glasses are
expensive.
I mean,
this is insane.
But do you need 7 pair?
No.
Okay.
No. But this is the biggest scam outside of, like, automobiles.
What, Palin or eyeglasses?
These little pieces of metal and plastic that they charge you hundreds of dollars for. I mean, fortunately, I got them partly on a sale and partly some of my insurance covered it. But, I don't know. So how do I look?
You look great.
You look marvelous.
I got these at the dollar store. They cost me $1.
Well, I think you did better than I did. 313-298-WRIF. I don't know. This remember at the height of the Bushco insanity with everything that this monstrous regime of the last 8 years has brought us, I used to start the show with, and in fact, I thought for a while it was going to be my signature statement. That is, I just don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually beginning to bother me because this show is only on once a week, and there's so many things that happen and so many things that go wrong and so many things that are threatening. I mean, even the weather. I got soaked this afternoon.
I know.
Just walking to the car.
It was raining like the dickens out there.
Yeah, yeah. So I just don't know where to start on all this. I've actually not been paying, like, extraordinarily close attention to every little bit and pieces of this. I think the Palin storm, like what the remnants of Ike, is beginning to fade.
Do you
as
think?
Well, yeah.
I don't know. It seems like as I go through the news online, it's all about her.
Well, the media is, but of course, we're talking about a fickle audience, the American public. And
yeah.
It was, she has 90%. 90%
recognition.
Yeah.
Well, also I read that among young evangelicals, they're kind of split about her.
How come?
I didn't read past that.
I saw the headline.
That's all I saw.
Come on, one of us has to do this. Well, this was in Maureen Dowd's column on September 10th called My Fair Veep.
Read that one.
So it's the first time we have a My Fair Lady moment. As a team of experts, this is before the interview she did with Charles Gibson. Experts bustle around the most famous woman in politics, intensely coaching her for a big moment at the ball, her first unscripted interview here this week with ABC News, Charlie Gibson. I guess they call him Charlie. I don't call him Charles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just saw that little bit, and she was just letting loose with platitudes the way most politicians do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of them try to give it a little more substance than others. I think of Barack Obama. Often, not always, but often tries to put more substance into what he's saying. But whenever he does it, he looks distant and elite and what have you. Because he's trying to say something rather than what Rick Davis, a top McCain advisor, said. This election is not about issues. Hello, we didn't think it was about the economy or the wars or Enron or Abu Ghraib or foreclosures.
Right.
We didn't. It's not about those issues, folks. Rick Davis, the top McCain, actually, I'm going to start calling him M.C. Kane. Can we do that?
Sure.
M.C. Kane, advisor, said, the election is not about issues. This election is about a composite view of what people take away from these candidates.
That's frightening.
Yeah. I've been looking. Somebody have this. I thought it was by Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi minister of propaganda, that said something, and I can't get the language right, something about we don't speak to make a point, we speak to make an impression.
Well, that sounds exactly right. And
I couldn't
find it there. I think this Rick Davis may be right.
Well, but you know what I think? I think that most of the people are in fact, that doesn't apply to them.
That it doesn't for me. I know.
Well,
that.
Probably 40-45% of people are back Barack Obama, knowing. I mean, either they're long-term Democrats or they are, or they realize the gravity of the situation and the absolute mess that Bush Co. has created, and that M.C. Kane is part of that and a continuation of it. So. To an extent, it is the election is a referendum on the last 8 years. Do you think things have gone well over the last 8 years? Have you done better? Well, then maybe you should think about voting for MCK.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're worried about the direction, and 82% of us said we think that the United States is on the wrong track, well, you really think that there's going to be anything different? Do I think that Barack Obama is going to be a revolutionary, he's going to turn everything around, make life completely different, save us from all the travail that we're facing? No. But when I say that he's better than a stick in the eye, M.C. Kane is a stick in the eye.
Well, and you know what, Peter? Sarah Palin makes him look mild. Every day it gets scarier with this chick. But really what we have to focus on is not her. It's the two people who are running for president.
Well, you know, I actually, I was making some notes, and I was thinking that at first, but what a diversion she is from M.C.
Yeah.
Kane, and the fact that he is just, would be Bush Co. 3 if he was to be elected. But, you know, that idea that Sarah Palin is a heartbeat away is really kind of frightening.
Right, and if anyone wants to read a frightening article about that, Frank Rich, his editorial in
today's New York Times
today.
Yeah, just nytimes.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the opinion section. You know, what is really unfortunate, wait a minute, I have a body of unfinished thought. I know that's unusual for you. But Let me, I've completely forgot it. All right, we'll go on. I will be reminded, but about Palin is that we thought that these creatures from the Black Lagoon, everybody from the far Christian right, had finally been recognized by the vast majority of American people about the malign effect they have on our country, how their politics of intolerance and arrogance and ultimately corruption, right? How many sex scandals have all these devout born-agains had? And these are the leaders, oh, yeah. Folks. I know a lot of you who are born-agains.
Now someone's going to bring up Bill Clinton.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, he was a piker. I mean, he's not going around talking about...
He's been a dog forever.
He's been a dog forever. The rascal from Arkansas.
I think he may still be a dog.
Yeah,
he
probably is. Yeah. But that the Palin candidacy is the reemergence and the reinvigoration of these far right-wing Christian fanatics. Because that's the politics that she enunciates, mm-hmm. and she tries to back away from him. And she was lying about a lot of the stuff about that quote about Iraq being God's war. She,
attributing it to Lincoln.
Lincoln, come on,
give us a break. I mean, they really had to think about that one.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they had so many
anything.
Come on, look. But maybe it's not even so hard anymore. You just Google something, God war, and you go, hey, look at that. Number three, it's Lincoln.
Here it is.
Yeah, isn't that what you meant, Sarah? Yeah. But the one moment that I did see was, somewhere I have the quote, too, but I'm not sure exactly where. It's been quoted over and over again. But seeing it was that deer in the headlight look when they asked her about the Bush doctrine.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was blink, blink.
Yeah, blink, blink. And she said,
what do you mean,
in
Charlie?
In regards to what?
Yeah, what
exactly. Something like that.
Yeah, in regards to what, Charlie? And he probably thought,
ooh. Oh.
Yeah. And people say, hey, come on, man. It was this, elite media guy picking on a hockey mom.
Yeah, well, I would like for someone who's in that high of an office to freaking know what started the entire Iraq war.
All right, well, although somebody said that it's not quite clear to anybody what the Bush Doctrine is. It's been coming and going for a long time.
Yeah.
One of the things that got us into trouble. Now, remember that Bush's popularity remains among about 25% of the population, and she's one of them. She's one of them. So what is that? But here, one of the things, and I was starting to say about the heartbeat away, And people have made this point, but this is a lot more frightening than I thought. And here, this is, you can go to my website, PeterWerbe.com, PeterWerbe.com. Although I should, I have to bring this up. Or you can go to The Real McCain. So it's just The Real McCain, M-C-C-A-I-N. That's why I call him M.C. Cain. But this is called McCain's Health. And it says, and what they're advocating on this is John McCain's health records must be released because this could be a quick interregnum. That is to say, just the intervening time between the election of an M.C. Cain presidency and the assumption to political power of Sarah Palin. Now here, this is just a section of it. I don't know if I'm going to play the whole thing. Yeah, I might. It's about 3.5 minutes long. So this is at, TheRealMcCain.com. You're listening to WRIF. I'm Peter Werbe with Jalene Jordan, and our numbers are 313-298-WRIF. Let's give a listen to this. I'm hoping that it will play. I got to put that on. I press this.
Senator McCain's medical records were released to a select group of journalists.
It's sort of a little bit of a different experience than I'm used to as a medical doctor. We're going to be sort of ensconced in this room for a period of time. No electronic devices are allowed in.
Over 1,000 pages of his own health records.
3 hours to review hundreds of pages of medical records. A daunting task, even for a doctor. No copies can be made of McCain's records. There's no internet or cell phone use allowed in the room.
He's running for the highest office in the land. His health, with limits, becomes the public business.
He's had every kind of skin cancer you can get. Basal cell cancer, squamous cell cancer, and of course malignant melanoma.
There's so much we don't know about this illness, and it's so incredibly difficult to treat once it has recurred, that the relevance of knowing the details of his course with melanoma are very important.
Well, we're excited about a lot of the immunotherapies or vaccines for melanoma, but to date there's really still no good cure for melanoma once it's spread. So these are the survival curves of patients with melanoma over 15 years that were produced by the American Joint Committee on Cancer Staging. You can see on the bottom are the number of years, and on the side are the proportion of people surviving. So in the beginning, 100% of people are alive, but the more serious your melanoma is, the less chance you have of survival. And you can see stage 2 melanoma, which is what Senator McCain had, that there's about a 60% chance survival at 10 years, but it continues to trail off over 15 years.
Malignant melanoma strikes almost 63,000 people in the U.S. every year and claims more than 8,000 lives.
McCain's had melanoma removed 4 times, the most recent in 2002. There's a 66% chance of it recurring within 10 years. 8 years have already passed.
The cancer risks rise with age.
The truth is that you can have recurrence from a deep melanoma, such as he had, as many as 20 years later you can have a recurrence. And so those statistics are known, and we should just know the absolute details about what his chances for survival are.
So if he was to have a recurrence in the course of the next few years, the treatments are so difficult and so toxic that during the time he would be undergoing potentially life-prolonging treatment, he would be disqualified and incapacitated from fulfilling the responsibilities of a public servant.
He smoked 2 packs a day for 25 years.
Degenerative arthritis.
A lot of people might not have known that he had had cataract surgery in the past.
High cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, vertigo, and allergies.
He's on 6 different medications for his kidneys, for his cholesterol. He takes Ambien occasionally.
There are a list of diseases that just get more common with age. Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease, stroke, arthritis. He has a lot of them. I'd like to know what tests are being done to see if he has any others.
John McCain's age makes his health particularly relevant.
The military screens everyone very carefully for their medical records, and if someone's going to fly a plane, you wouldn't want to find out later that they had seizures while you're flying the plane. So by the same comparison, we wouldn't want to find out midstream that, you know, he's going to die of melanoma a year later.
We deserve to know the details of his medical records, and the American people deserve to make an assessment of whether they're satisfied that he's capable of fulfilling his obligations as president.
You're listening to Night Call. I'm Peter Werby with Jalene Jordan, and that was a short video from the site The Real McCain, therealmccain.com. It's also on my site, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com. Let me tell you something. I would vote for somebody that was 80 years old, easily. Yep. Don't tell me you want your mic on.
Yeah. Okay.
I would vote for somebody that was 80 years old. I would vote for somebody that was 72 years old. But as this video asks, we have to know, well, 2 things. One, we have to know the health of the person that is aspiring to the office. And the second thing, we want to know about the team. So if Barack Obama, for instance, was 72 years old, and like many 72-year-olds, was in very good health. I mean, I know guys that are 72 years old that I play handball with that beat my butt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
my
parents are
72. They're kicking butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing is you want to know the team. Who would be the person that would be number two? So if it was reversed and Barack Obama was 72 and had released all of his records, we knew he was very healthy, and we knew that someone with experience and that had politics, although I've got a lot of disagreements with Joe Biden and some of the bills he's passed and voted on, it'd be okay. But we're looking at something that's pretty shaky. Or does that bother you? And do you think this was fair or unfair? I think it was very fair, and I think it's something that we ought to know, and something that's being suppressed. And it's one of the things, as you correctly said, that it's a diversion that we ought to be looking at MC Cain.
Yes.
313-298-WRIF. So here's what I, I think you have this as well, was, it's from Politico. And I think Politico, Politico.com, is a news site. And it's 5 reasons why MC Cain has pulled ahead. And this is absolutely astounding to me. The first one is McCain as a agent of change.
Mm-hmm.
Change.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8 in 10 Americans say they believe the country is on the wrong track. That's 80% of us, folks. This, again, this happened over the last 8 years under the rule, the malign rule of Bushko. Obama has built his campaign on the perception that he is both the personification of change and also the man to enact it. And it says, even though McCain has spent decades in Washington and a member of his party is in the White House, recent polling shows that he has managed to successfully portray himself as a change agent and erode Obama's brand in the process. Well, this is horrible.
Yeah. Well, he did kind of try to steal that whole change thing, didn't he?
We do that in radio.
Right. Well, they always say imitate the best, but, you know, hey.
Most sincere form of flattery as well, but, okay, CBS polling this week found that 46% of voters believe McCain can change Washington, up from 28% in July.
Yikes.
So I wrote here, why?
Yeah.
Why? And why would he? Well, first off,
it's
maybe
called the sheeple.
Yeah, well, that's an outside explanation. Maybe we should ask people to call in 313-298-WRIF and ask you what elements of MC Kane's program makes you believe that he would be an agent of change, since, as we know, that he's voted with Bushko 90% of the time, although he's made, you know, tremendous contradictory statements. I guess they call it flip-flopping these days.
Oh, yeah, flip-flopping.
Flip-flopping man. But why would he want to change things? He admires George W. Bush. He thinks now, I mean, the current incarnation of MC Kane is that he admires everything that Bush has done. Well, he's got some criticism.
And he claims it, you know. Yeah. And another thing I think that probably helped him this week is 9/11.
You really think so?
Yeah. I think, you know what? It happened. I predicted this. I said, you know what? Everyone's going to get all riled up again. And, you know, people were, someone asked me, didn't you cry today?
Really?
You know, and I said, well, I thought about it, but no, I didn't cry. And not that I am calloused about it or, you know, I feel for the families and everyone who.
Sure. We still saw some of that. But maybe again, it's less, if you're less immersed in the media. I mean, I thought about it.
Yeah.
I had some things happening on that day, and I thought, man.
Well, it's also my wedding anniversary, and I'm no longer married.
A day that will live in infamy. Oh, no, that's December 7th, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Let's not go there.
No.
But where were we? Oh, September. Oh, it's hard to say. I know the point that I was trying to make way back when we think about the impact that the Palin nomination has had, or rebranding the element of change in John McCain and all that. And it doesn't happen with everybody, because 40-45% of people are immersed in the beliefs of the Democratic Party, or more probably accurately, what they think the Democratic Party represents. And probably a third of the people or so, maybe a little more, are immersed in the conservative ideology, the pro-business, pro-empire politics of the Republican Party. So that leaves sort of a slice, and I don't know if my figures all add up, but a slice in the middle. Like, remember, and I inappropriately got a little angry at a couple of women that work here that they were talking about. Sarah Palin and blah, blah, blah.
Don't mess with my Sarah.
Yeah. But then you reminded me, you told me to chill.
I told you to save it for Sunday.
Yeah, that's right. But you reminded me that these people voted, these working class people voted for Bush in the last two elections.
Yeah.
And had Mitt Romney or some other boring, or Joe Lieberman been nominated the way the maverick MC Kane wanted, they would have been just as enthusiastic. I mean, a little more.
They would have been. And you know what? This is what's happened. The Republican Party is so crusty and full of fungi, you know what I mean? that Sarah Palin has given these people new hope.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, she's the little razzle-dazzle spark plug that they needed.
Yeah, so, all right, so let's go back to the agent of change that MC Kane, change agent.
Back to the five reasons why McCain has pulled ahead.
Well, one of the things,
according to this article,
what's going on here, the advisor, the sort of the Dick Cheney, if you will, of the McCain campaign is this ex-senator from Texas, Phil Graham, who is the architect of deregulation under the Republicans and, unfortunately, passed in some cases by Bill Clinton, the architect of deregulations that created this crisis that we're facing tonight where it looks like the whole financial system is in the crapper. Mm-hmm. So where's the change? Someone tell me. 313-298-WRIF. And I'll tell you what, I won't even argue with you. I mean, just tell me, what's the perception that MC Cain is, we were thinking about something else, that MC Cain is an agent of change. And if anybody is into rapping, if you can do an MC Cain rap, either in...
Why he's good or why he's bad?
No, either way, I was going to say, okay. Either you can either do it as MC Cain or one about him. Whether you are pro, whether you could have it a parody. I mean, you got to start writing right now, but it's just doggerel.
But no cursing.
Right? No cursing at all. We got a little button
that
here.
Sometimes goes along with rap.
Yeah, it does. Right. We got a little button here that...
Don't test us, though.
Yeah.
Well, don't make us press that button.
We're on break now. As you hear this, we're already on break. All right. The other two things, they have this element in these elections called October Surprise, where the Republicans pull something out of a hat to make people forget about the real issues. And there's two of them. Osama bin Forgotten by George W. Bush. Remember, he said, I don't even think about him. He is suddenly being remembered. And that raid into Pakistan.
Last week.
Yeah. That set the Pakistanis, saying that we might not even cooperate with the United States anymore. There was this helicopter-borne U.S. Special Operations Forces that, according to NPR, was not an isolated incident, but part of a three-phase plan approved by President Bush to strike at Osama bin Laden and top al-Qaeda leadership. So let me see. Said a source who's been briefed on the plan, definitely the gloves have come off. And I wrote in my margins here, why now? I mean, why wasn't the gloves off
after
6 years?
9/11.
Yeah, well, they had to go invade, create this oil war.
Right.
And let's see. Down here at the end, it says both sources say those in the intelligence community on Capitol Hill are raising questions about the political intent of this new aggressive stance. Said one of the sources, it's the same thing. The question is, why wasn't this done a year ago? Because there's not going to be an election in 50-something days. So, again, playing with our lives. The second thing that could happen is, although this is, I think, not set until November, sort of got too many articles here, but I'll find the exact date, is what could be the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, Phase 2. This is when a Russian armada of battleships is going to arrive in the Western Hemisphere, in Venezuela, to do these military exercises with it. And including, let me see here, including a ship called Peter the Great. I love that.
Isn't this the one with some kind of nuclear...
Yeah, a vessel with massive firepower whose missiles can deliver nuclear or conventional warheads will participate in the Caribbean maneuver. So here is a Russian ship. Now, what is the United States going to do? We have something called the Monroe Doctrine that was written way back in the 1830s or whenever. And it said, no European powers can muck around in our territory. And you can't do things like send armadas from European nations here. Well, what basis or what ground do we have to object? Forget about we. They, these people that have said that Georgia is a crucial part of American interests. And Sarah Palin, who said, hey, do you have that quote there when they said, well, what if...
I don't.
Well, she advocated Georgia, the country of Georgia.
Well, she said, we may have to go to war with Russia.
Yeah, right.
Just flippantly like that.
Well, Alaska will not be in... I don't think Alaska is targeted. Oh, probably it's got all these military bases up there. But Georgia would become part of the NATO. Everybody says, NATO, yeah, that's our alliance. But you know what it stands for, folks? North Atlantic Treaty Organization. North Atlantic, that is on countries that are border on the North Atlantic. That is Canada, the United States, and England, and France, and Netherlands, places like that. I don't think any of the Scandinavian countries are in there, maybe. But it doesn't include ones in the Caucasus Mountains. Right.
Right?
Yeah, so, and one's on the border of Russia, that not of a country that suspects U.S. motives, that has felt hostility from the United States for 80 years or so.
But if MC Kane has anything to do with it, they will be.
Okay, if you got some raps for MC Kane, let us know. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Oh,
and
yeah.
calltalkyes@yahoo.com if you are bashful or
tongue-tied. The lines are filled. We'll be right back.
I want you all to know.
The greatest country in the world.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Every man needs a sanctuary.
What do you have in mind?
Your very own little piece of manly heaven with everything you need to be, you know, manly. Like a ginormous TV, totally sick amount of electronics, sports, and more sports. Oh, yeah. Let's not forget the sweet nectar of life, beer.
Yes! That's awesome!
The Riff wants to give a call to you. Listen for details on how you can win the WRIF Man Cave. Coming soon from 101 WRIF. Weekday night at 10 with Meltdown. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4. With a nail in it. Mandatory Metallica. Now, it's your triple play of the mighty Metallica. With a big unit. Every weekday night at 10. Exclusively from your one and only Metallica station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Do you know why you get dark circles under your eyes? Because blood leaks out of your capillaries and pools under your skin. I'm not kidding. It's just like an ugly bruise. But now you can erase dark circles with a proven breakthrough called Hydralyze. Hydralyze diminishes dark circles and tightens puffiness and bags by repairing leaky capillaries, leaving you with younger, brighter eyes. See for yourself by calling for a free trial right now. Just call 1-800-497-8630.
My husband, he can't stop complimenting me. People tell me I look 10 years younger.
Even surgery cannot deliver these stunning results. Hydralyze is so powerful it even helps build new collagen in the skin, reducing crow's feet and wrinkles. Try Hydralyze risk-free and see for yourself.
Well, I used it and, wow, the dark circles are gone. I don't look tired anymore. I feel great.
You deserve younger, brighter eyes. Call now for your free trial of Hydralyze and experience the transformation for yourself. For your free trial, call 1-800-497-8630. That's 1-800-497-8630.
Does your basement or crawl space have a damp, musty smell? Well, watch out. That's a sign of too much moisture and not enough ventilation. And that can mean increased mold growth and the buildup of harmful toxins and gases. Don't bother with a dehumidifier. It just circulates the same unhealthy air. Now, there's a better way to remove those dangers. It's with the Wave Moisture Control Unit. Call 1-866-324-9477. Wave expels moisture and improves the air quality in your entire home. It requires no maintenance. No buckets to empty, no filters. And compared to a dehumidifier, it'll save you hundreds of dollars each year in energy costs. Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Call Wave right now for free information. Call 1-866-324-9477 or log on to healthyhousenow.com. That's healthyhousenow.com. Or call now 1-866-324-9477.
With a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line, a flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched to thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore.
All right, welcome back. This is Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. And it's right out of my mind who that is.
That is... Why do you put me on the spot like that?
Well...
It'll come to us.
McMultry?
Oh, James McMurtry.
Oh, James McMurtry.
Thank you.
James McMurtry, right. So why did they play that other than that it's... a good song, and it defines, not everyone certainly in this country, but way too many people that have become victims. And I know you're not supposed to be a victim. Well, there are victims, people that gave their all either in a battle or gave their all at the workplace, and there's just nothing to give them the safety net that they deserve. Well, this from the Detroit Free Press. Detroit is the poorest big city in the U.S. Ain't that sweet? The city was not the only place that grew poorer. Michigan was the only state in the nation to see any increase in its poverty level. Now 14%. And remember that the federal poverty level is $20,650 annually for a household of four. So mom and dad and two kids, or mom, as it often is, and three kids, supposed to live on $20,000 a year. What do you think?
I think it's tough for one person to live on that.
Sure. And it probably, I would say, what, bare minimum, $35,000, $40,000 a year. So that means that, I don't know, it says the increase meant there are now 1,377,000 people living below the poverty line in our state. And
in our state?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Almost 1.5 million people, or 1,377,000. And so maybe just enough said just with that.
Yeah.
Richard wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And for some reason or other, must have sent us 75 photos. Richard, I can't begin to tell you what that does to our email, but it's Alaska Women Reject Palin Rally is huge. So there was a big rally in Alaska.
As big as his file that he sent us.
Yeah. So
we do appreciate the information, because I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah. Anything for you to read, or I would go to the phones?
Well, I did get one. Let's see. Steve wrote in and said, "Hello, Peter. Do blame McCain. The only reason he can get away with his lies is the American people are so stupid."
Yeah.
Thank you. Then he says, "Thank you, Stephen Lincoln Park."
Let's go to Chris in Pinckney. Hey, Chris. Thanks for joining us on WRIF. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Going great.
First, I want to congratulate you on your liberal Grammy.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
And second off, I want to get started on Senator Palin, if we can.
Oh,
Governor Palin.
Governor. Let's get past the mundane.
Actually,
you sound kind of muffled.
Yeah, you sound muffled.
You sound like this.
The senator, of course, from Alaska, a friend of Palin's, has been indicted for corruption charges. You knew that.
Yeah.
You knew that, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
And I'm just talking about how everyone's, you know, getting on her case for not knowing what she's doing. Maybe I've been hearing talk of that lately, and I just want to point the finger at Barack Obama personally.
Why?
Well, I mean, people are, you know, I heard people complaining about the hurricanes. You know, I didn't see Barack Obama with his fancy suit and necktie down there putting sandbags. You know?
Oh, well, he actually canceled everything because of the hurricanes. Did you know that?
Chris, what the hell are you talking about? Fancy tie. I mean, are you getting into one of these things that he is like this elite and somehow the Republicans, the voice of the multimillionaires in this country, are somehow the party of the people?
I personally think that Barack Obama is sucking up the free trade and everything that I've stood for my 45-year lifespan.
Well, wait a minute now. Free trade is something that was passed by the Republican majority, and in one of the worst acts that have ever in the Clinton administration that occurred is that Bill Clinton signed that into law. The majority of Democrats voted against the NAFTA, but Barack Obama has said that he is going to re-examine many parts of NAFTA. Do I think he's going to do it for sure? Is he going to unravel all of that, those institutions that have come about since the middle 90s or whenever that got in? I have my doubts, but we know that John McCain is completely committed to NAFTA. And why do you make the remark about the suit? I don't understand that.
I think that he's a fancy showboater. Is all my personal opinion.
Well, most politicians are.
I mean,
that's what they do. They're polished machines. You know.
I don't understand why.
Do you
agree
with that?
Yeah. Why would here? Let's talk about issues. What's the difference between policies of John McCain and the policies of Barack Obama? And maybe Barack Obama is a showboater. Maybe he wears fancy suits. But it doesn't have anything about doesn't have any bearing on the policies that he's going to carry out once he gets into office. We know for sure he's untested. So you might say, well, geez, an unknown quantity. We don't know what he's going to do. He said a few things, mostly things that will help the middle class and the working class. We never know what politicians are going to do once they get in. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But we do know absolute for certain what John McCain's going to do because he says that he supports everything that has sent this nation into ruin, right?
Well, these things you're talking about that sent this nation into ruin, I mean, you know, I got the buyouts and I'm living nice, so I mean, that's what's important.
You got to buy, in other words, from a company, one of the many companies, it's hard for me to believe that a buyout could make you very comfortable because whatever it is, but if that's the case, so be it. But we have come to the point in the United States of America where people say things are going well because I've got a buyout because the company that was the bedrock of the American financial system or industrial system can't keep workers anymore. Jesus, man. Think. All right, I wasn't going to do that either. Yeah. And there I did it. 313-298-WRIF. Talk about selfies. That's what hit me. You know, I got a buyout.
So
what'd
I'm
you get, $125,000?
No, it was I'm fine, and that's all that matters,
yeah.
Really.
Wait a minute. He said he's 45 years old. Say he got $150,000. You know, 25 years ago, that would have been a lot of money.
It's amazing how fast you can blow through that.
Yeah, and it's taxable, so he maybe winds up at 100 grand, and I don't know.
Well, is that going to last you the rest of your life? No.
I don't think so. Here's Tyler in Commerce. Hey, Tyler, it's Peter and Jillian. Hi.
Hey, well...
Can you shut your radio completely off?
Yeah, just one second.
Okay. 313-298-WRIF, and have your radio off. Okay. Glad to see you.
Welcome.
Yeah, hi, you're on here.
Hey, well, yeah. This is kind of off the topic of what I was going to talk about, but I think, like, McCain's going to just kind of throw us, like, back into the bush. Like, I'm in eighth grade, and a whole bunch of seventh graders are talking about, like, how they wanted McCain to go through everything, and they're saying, like, all about... He was in Vietnam, but they didn't even talk about how, like, he was in, like, prison camp for how long.
Yeah.
But they didn't really know a lot about it. They were just talking nonsense.
So maybe they're listening to their parents, huh?
Well,
I gotta
say, Tyler, spending time in a prison camp does not prepare you for the presidency as General, what was his name, who was at one point almost thought of as a candidate. I'm not thinking of names tonight very well.
Emma. Yeah, I know who you're thinking about. The guy with the kind of gray hair.
Yeah, he got a lot of flack for saying that. But, I mean, how in the world does being in a prison camp 40 years before, I mean, one way or another.
I have to say, Tyler, I am impressed, though. You're in eighth grade and you're talking about politics. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're into it, though, right?
Yeah, well, for my real thing, I was going to talk about, like, the genocide in Darfur and what do you think each one would do?
Oh, in Darfur.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether either of them has said anything very directly.
Yeah, they're so focused on everything else that maybe they'll come up in the debates. Maybe that'll come back.
Right, Tyler. Thanks for joining us. Please call again. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here's Dan in White Lake. Dan, hi. It's Peter and Jillian. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I'll digress slightly. I think I remember listening to you when you were doing solo back in the late 70s. Is that possible?
Yes.
Could I have been around that long? Yeah, I guess so.
I'm a big Hillary supporter, or I was.
Yeah.
And the one thing that keeps me apprehensive about going forward with Obama is the world is in such a mess, our country, the world in general, that I'm not sure we can afford to have somebody who's seemingly unprepared to take a year to find out what his job is, even.
Why do you,
that kind of bothers me.
Why do you think he's unprepared?
Well, for three reasons, just off the top of my head. No executive experience.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in the Senate, but he's never authored a bill. He's not voted on too many things. He spent the last year running for president. I'm not sure how prepared he is.
Hasn't he been in government most of his adult life?
Yeah, he has. Well, not, yeah.
Like in Illinois?
And some of that about not authoring the bills, I mean, that's Republican propaganda. I forgot exactly, you know, what he has. But he's authored. You know, one thing is that these guys are surrounded by experts. And depending on, I mean, you had situations where Woodrow Wilson, like when he had a stroke, his wife virtually ran the executive office for the last year and a half. And you've had other situations of incapacitation where, you know, that other people have been instrumental in running. Now, I don't think you should put anybody in that's completely inexperienced. I mean, the fact that Sarah Palin has had very little executive experience doesn't bother me like quite a bit of people are.
It's her views that bother you, right?
It's her beliefs. It's her views. It's what she says about issue. John McCain has been in government for a very long time, authored lots of bills, and his judgment isn't very sound. I mean, given his support for Bush, given his support for you know, the Iraq War, and his continuing talk about victory, which means absolutely, you know, little or nothing, particularly to the Iraqi people and U.S. soldiers fighting it. So in a Barack Obama administration, he would have the advice of people that have long experience. I mean, it was like George W. Bush. You could say, well, here was a guy that had long executive experience. He was the governor of Texas for, what, 8 years? He was there for two terms. So he had the experience, but he was manipulated. Well, you know, there's even a debate whether he was manipulated by Cheney or whether his own, horrible views on almost everything prevailed. So, you know what I'm saying? You can have people with lots of executive experience, and they turn out to be disasters like Bush. And the McCain presidency would be Bush Co. 3, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, I don't think necessarily that would be the case, though Bush might go down as the worst president we've ever had.
Right.
With how we don't vote on our cabinet positions, and we don't vote on the people that surround the president. So, and until he actually vocalizes some of more specifically what he wants to do, I just feel a little uncomfortable at this point.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. I mean, I don't want to get in the position like I often do of making some strong case for Barack Obama. There's any number of things. Let me tell you that if for no other issue, if Barack Obama did not represent change in the slightest, if in fact he continued the policies of George W. Bush, it's terrible to say. I probably would stay home, but if I knew that. But the Supreme Court and the appointees. Right now, what's happened over the last several years is the stacking of the court with far right-wing Catholic justices. And the only reason I mention their specific brand of Christianity is that they're very anti-abortion. The election of John McCain means repeal of Roe versus Wade. That's it. Abortion will be illegal. This will be like Argentina or any of the other South American and Central American countries where it's illegal. Also, it has to do with any number of things regarding civil liberties and civil rights and
the environment,
all things that Christianity. Or the Catholicism of the justices didn't matter, but rather their commitment to corporate America, the corporate agenda, which is actually what conservatism is. So if for no other reason whatsoever, the man who is going to pick the next couple of Supreme Court justices and some of those people that are the centrists, there are no liberal justices on the Supreme Court at all. There are centrists and there are far-right wingers, and there is nobody on the left whatsoever. that there's nobody that could be in terms of their views. Maybe even center-left, I would give you that, maybe with David Souter and maybe Justice Ginsburg. But other than that, they don't qualify as even liberal. And Barack Obama probably will not elect a liberal justice. He'll elect, or he would select and nominate a center, a center leftist, hopefully, a liberal, you know, center, whatever, that would uphold the right of women to choose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as we said last week to a caller, if you don't like abortions, don't have it.
Don't have one.
Don't thrust your view of theology and biology
onto
other
my
people.
Body.
Yeah, or anyone else's. Don't have the cops.
I just think it's
figure this out.
It's, you know, I thought about this all week after last week. We had the big heated abortion debate, and I think I'm more upset than ever. Just the thought that anyone would tell me really what I can and cannot do. I just, it's beyond my thought process.
Well, great numbers of people, including some of the people we were talking about earlier, they think that male legislators ought to make laws forbidding abortion, and that it'll be enforced by mainly male cops.
Yeah, which makes me think, you know, I thought women had come a long way, but really not so much. It could be just taken away like that.
Well, the majority of people support Roe v. Wade. That said that this is a private matter between a woman and her physician. And, you know, you say, no, this is what the conservatives say. They always talk about they support freedom. They don't support freedom. They support the freedom of the wealthy to make all the money they can. But when it comes to a woman's right to choose, send in the cops. And when I'm talking about, I mean, you police officers listening, I don't mean I'm not saying that any criticism of you guys or women, but rather that that a law will be made against abortion, and that will be one of the crimes, as it was before the early 1970s. That will be one of the crimes that your time will be taking up, trying to ferret out. All right, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF. We will be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, it's Mike. Enjoy this nice rainy weekend, and we'll see you Monday morning with Killer Kowalski and his analysis of the Lions' home opener. Plus, we've got an interview with Shirley Manson, lead singer of Garbage, and now featured on the Fox show Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And we'll talk with Reggie Waller and his company, Private Paparazzi. Yes, you too can have cameras and photogs hysterically shooting pictures around you as you go to the mall, convincing everyone you're a star for a price. All right, that and more Monday morning with us. Mike in the Morning on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Yeah, all right, I'll see you guys there.
Mike in the Morning, no subscription necessary on 101 WRIF.
Tailgating with Junior Nation is only for the proud. If you got a voice left, then you're not screaming loud.
This is Junior Nation, we're tailgating champs. One nail junior takes, believe me, I'll raise our game demands.
Junior, I want a tailgate. Let's win this thing and go.
Got my lucky inflatable chair and my 88 tattoo.
Can someone help inflate a sectional for two?
This is Junior Nation.
It's me more than just a crew.
If you can't stay up for a straight, then that would you.
It takes energy to be a part of Junior Nation, and you can get energy the same way Dale Earnhardt Jr. does with Amp Energy. Energy, focus, control. Amp Energy. Amp yourself.
Head over to Walmart this week and pick up a 4-pack of Mountain Dew Amp for only $4.98. Walmart, saving you money so that you can live better.
Another WRIF concert. Get ready for America's rock band. Leonard Skinner. Live in concert. September 21st at DTE Energy Music Theater. The band that's always rocked the nation, Leonard Skinner. Bringing America together again. There's never been a better time. September 21st at DTE Energy Music Theater.
Tickets are on sale now at PalaceNet.com. The Palace and DT Energy Music Theater box offices and at all Ticketmaster outlets. The real deal is coming. Leonard Skinner live, part of the Bell Tire Concert Series. 101 WRIF.
It's all about the price of oil. Don't give me no about blood, sweat, tears, and toil. It's all about the price of oil.
Welcome back to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jillian Jordan. Jillian and I are here for another hour. At 1 a.m., a couple of interesting guests. Larry Beinhardt, who's written a new book called Salvation Boulevard. This is a guy I've interviewed before. He writes he writes nonfiction as well. You know what he wrote? He wrote Wag the Dog. Remember that film with
Dustin Hoffman
and De Niro?
Oh yeah,
as well. But he uses his novel, and in this case, it confronts the role of religion in politics. So the theme is a Muslim student is accused of murdering an atheist professor. He's defended by a Jewish lawyer who uses a born again Christian as an investigator.
Oh my gosh!
So that's a good interview. But and also then David W. Moore, he's a former senior editor with the Gallup polling organization, and he has written a book called. I can't even read it here. The Opinion Makers. An insider exposes the truth behind the polls. And he's pretty dissatisfied. We see these polls, you know, this and that. And usually, as I, you know, I said earlier, it's usually about 5 and 6% of the population being swept this way and that by the last thing they saw on television, usually
right.
Fox News. Noose, N-O-O-S-E. Right. So that'll all be at 1 a.m. Eastern time. And speaking about the price of oil, talk about highway robbery. Talk about theft. Why in the world would the price of gasoline go up the way it has in the Detroit area, up to, in some cases, almost $4.50 a gallon, when the Michigan suppliers are fully, fully supplied?
Right, and because they're saying because of the oil refineries being down because of Hurricane Ike.
But that hasn't happened yet.
I think it's called price gouging.
Yeah, and think about this. I was thinking about this earlier. They say it's all supply and demand. Well, we know that, for one thing, the oil companies have made extraordinary profits, excess profits, as they call it. I call it looting, and made record profits, particularly ExxonMobil. They don't have to do that. They're selling it at a high price because they can.
Yeah. And what is it right now? I read something that it's not $5, is it?
No. I mean, I think some places it actually hit that.
It was $4.20 or something yesterday. Fortunately, I drive so little.
Yeah.
That, that's the good news. I drive so little, really.
That's because you always have a designated driver.
No, it's because I live around the corner.
Right.
But I do use a designated driver.
That's good.
When needed.
Yes. Let's go to Dave. He's listening in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dave, hi. It's Peter and Jillian in Detroit. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm actually calling from Howell this evening, out towards Lansing. Howell's my hometown. I'm up for 3 or 4 days from Tulsa. And I actually moved down to Tulsa a year and a half ago because of how bad it was getting here. I got out of the Marine Corps, and I couldn't find work.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
I came back to visit family, and I'm coming home to a house in foreclosure. And actually, just down the street, I just drove home just now. I see a house that has a sign out, for sale by owner, or best offer, $70,000.
$70,000. Wow.
When's the last time you saw a house for sale that said or best offer?
Yeah, no.
Any house.
You know what? I hate to tell you this. I hate to say this, rather. No, I hate to tell you. I hate to say this. In my neighborhood, there's a house like that said that. And I can't remember what it was. It was under $100,000, and it said or best offer.
And it's been like this for years now.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it. I don't understand. We seem to be more worried about, I understand we need to get Kilpatrick out of office, but we seem to be more
He's
worried
gone.
About what's going on with the elections than what we can do right now to fix Michigan, because obviously we're the worst.
I don't know. I'll tell you, Dave, I'm not quite sure what can be done. I mean, as long as the federal treasury is bleeding money.
Well, not only that, I just drove from Novi, seeing my father,
yeah.
And the Wixom plant shut down, obviously.
Right. That is.
Yep.
And I'm hearing rumor even down in Tulsa, Michigan's going to turn into a service state.
Wow.
We've been a manufacturing state since we began.
Well, not back that far, but yeah, for a long time. This, they didn't call this the Motor City. They didn't call the Detroit the Arsenal of Democracy during World War II for nothing.
Yeah. Well, and you have families that have grown up for generations as manufacturing families. It's in their blood.
Sure.
And you're going to turn the state into a service state. We're going to lose ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just now I just read an article that said that the Chinese government has ordered all of these foreign companies, a lot of them Americans, there because they can pay low wages rather than the good wages that we fought so hard for in so many generations. And they're ordering these foreign companies to accept the state unions. So they left Detroit to get rid of the UAW, and now all of a sudden this authoritarian dictatorship says,
"We want, yeah. You must have unions." So how are things in Tulsa?
Tulsa is, well, we have the housing market crash.
Yeah.
Just like anybody else, but there's work. I went down, and within a week I was working in an auto dealership, worked there for a year, never had a layoff. No one ever got laid off unless they were dumb and got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And then parted ways with the dealership. Now I work as a foreman at a steel mill, and they do very well down there.
A steel mill? Well, you know, there's actually a steel mill right across the street from us. You know,
there
right
is?
Back here, yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, yeah.
Never knew.
So I guess there's still, it's not a big steel mill, though, right?
No, not down there. We make rebar. But yeah. The thing is you don't see layoffs down there. In fact, I looked through the Sunday paper this morning out here in Howell, the Livingston County paper, and your classified section, I can rub between my two fingers. I mean, it's so small.
Yeah, Dave, I shouldn't even let you on the air. You'll probably, for both of us, more people will leave Michigan, and you'll wind up with a lot of Michiganders down there in Tulsa.
You go down to Tulsa, and you open up paper. My job currently is to hire labor and make sure the job gets done.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't find people to work for me.
Wow.
It's good work. I did the same type of laborious job up here. I worked in a machine shop and whatnot, and you know, it was hard to keep that job because there's so many people here looking for work.
You know, Dave, there's a radio station, a competitor of ours, although a sister station, who's one of the slogans is one of the things they do is putting the Motor City back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could change it to putting the Motor City back to work in Tulsa. No, that wouldn't work. Never
no.
mind. Back to the drawing boards.
And the other problem you got, and it happens to fall on the Chinese, is, we're floating everything right now. The major mortgage corporations, I can't remember the name of them, but there's two that own over 80% of the mortgages nationwide, are starting to package those mortgages up and sell them as packages to overseas as investments.
Wait a minute. That's what happened. That's what got us in trouble to begin with. I don't know if they're still doing it. I don't think anybody's buying those packages anymore. You know, Dave, let me just welcome you home, but I actually got to move on. I was glad to give you the airtime and get that report from Tulsa, and glad to know that people are doing okay somewhere. Thank you. Appreciate your call. You know, we never got to the five reasons why MC Kane has pulled ahead. One of them was the center shifts, Independent's move to McCain. A recent CNN opinion poll. This calls for your...
Or not voting at all. I've heard that from a lot of people.
What? They're just not
going to vote for Nader or not at all.
Yeah. Well, this will, let me see how this ties into your opinion of men, you know. My wife has a very, very negative opinion of men.
Oh, she's worse than me.
She is. She's out of control. She read this book. Anyway, a recent CNN Opinion Research Corporation poll found that 62% of men have a favorable view of Palin.
Yeah, and like that friend of yours who I talked to the other day, he's unnamed.
Oh, yeah.
He said, "Tell Peter I like Sarah Palin because she's hot."
Oh, God.
And this guy's an artist, right?
Yeah.
Basically.
On the other hand, I mean, it's nice that they're looking, you know, people usually want to discard women once they pass 30. Here she's 44, so.
Yeah, well, and once again, a woman's a... You know, an object like that.
Yeah. Why would they? Just 53% of women view her favorably.
Maybe that's because they're hotter. She's hotter than them.
Maybe. Here's Ed in Belleville. Ed, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Good evening. How are you?
We're good.
Good, wonderful. Just want to say I've been sitting here listening to the show and definitely love the topics that you guys have been bringing up. And really, I'm a veteran, Navy, honorably discharged, and this country's just in a sad state of affairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's the folks that are in there running it now. I mean, come election time, I really, you know, my wife and I, neither one of us know who to vote for because we don't trust either side. And that's, you're seeing more of the mudslinging, you know, for 4 years, and it's, you don't know who to believe, and it's, you know, one side is this way, one side's that way, and it's just, like I said, you know, they say everything's great and dandy, but they're not, you know, here in Belleville, Michigan, or Detroit, Michigan,
sure.
Or, you know, it's just, you know, and kind of touching a little bit with the automakers and all that, I, you know, my personal view on it is I blame the unions for the, you know, the trouble that they've gotten themselves into, and it all boils down to greed.
Now, I wouldn't say that trying to have a middle-class lifestyle for the terrible industrial work that so many people do in steel mills and auto factories and places like that is actually has to do with greed. It has to do with sharing the wealth that they created. And you can only say that the unions caused their own problems if, you know, people say, well, they priced themselves out of the game. Well, yeah, because the manufacturers, having no allegiance to this country, no allegiance to the community in which they operate, no allegiance whatsoever to the people that work for them, figure, hey, we can go get somebody either in Mexico or China or Indonesia or someplace like that to work for a lot less. And I don't care about people. What I want is to maximize how much money goes to our rich stockholders. And so this way, I won't even have to fight with the unions. Of course, now, if they're in China, apparently they will have to fight with the unions because China has just, said that they're going to have to unionize at the plants or at, yeah, and offices where they're working. But the real question is, if you giving John McCain a term in office would be like saying, let's have more of the same. That's all. All right. Thank you, Ed. Let's see. I wanted to read this, though, because let's see. John wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I like the fact that you support Ron Paul and his ideas. Well, I don't support Ron Paul in the slightest. And in fact, I don't even support Barack Obama. I oppose John McCain because he is John McSane. And Ron Paul certainly has some forthright opinions. And you go online. In fact, I actually, maybe he said that. You know why John probably said this, Jolene? Is because I have a clip of Ron Paul on my website at Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. Because a lot of what he says, particularly about civil liberties, particularly about the empire and the empire for oil, is right on and much more forthright than Barack Obama says, and diametrically opposed to the man that would continue Bush's policy, both in energy and war, M.C. Cain. So, and a lot of his ideas I don't agree with either. I mean, he opposes unions. He doesn't support, well, what does he say about abortion? He said it should be left to the state.
Yeah, which is not good enough.
Yeah, they used to do that about what drinking fountain you could drink at, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the first thing that comes to my mind when someone says that.
Yeah. All right, let's continue on here, and it's Bill in Southfield. Bill, hi, it's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
Dave called in, wanted to know what was wrong with Michigan. Dave, if you're listening, it's these rotten Democrats. That's what's wrong with Michigan.
The rotten Democrats?
You want to know what's wrong with the war, Dave? It's the Democrats, because they're losers. Hey, Dave, you want to know why global warming? Because these Democrats are spewing all this hot air up in the atmosphere.
And Bill, the bosses love you. The bosses love you. Maybe you'll get your reward for it all. Thanks. I don't even know how to deal with that. All right. Here is Matt. Matt's in Windsor. Matt, thanks for making our show international. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks. How are you doing tonight? Good?
Doing well, yeah.
Good. I like you guys' topics. I tune in most Sunday nights or whatnot on my drive home. I want to say something about Barack here. I pay attention a lot. Obviously, we're a border city. A lot of what happens over there affects us, right, worldwide. And I think Barack's a good change in the sense of you know, the world's outlook on the United States, you know, like Bush, you know, just it's just been a big mess, in my opinion, you know. I don't know how he even got his second term.
Well, oh, same way he got the first term.
I guess, yeah.
Illegally.
He stole it.
Yeah, that's rough, you know, even, yeah, against Gore, you know, that was a rip-off kind of thing, but...
Well, he stole the one in, the Republicans stole it in 2004, and they're on the way to doing it again, both through manipulation and control of the electronic voting machines, through, they've got this new thing where they try to get people whose homes have been foreclosed of challenging their vote because they say they don't live there anymore, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Well, just one thing I think Barack hasn't really focused on a lot is that he was opposed to the Iraq War, which, you know, the whole world pretty much knows now was at least somewhat of a mistake, if not a total blunder.
Yeah, I would say, total blunder, I think, even underestimates.
Yeah, you know, like it's their good service men and women over there, you know, giving their life and fighting and giving their time away from family and everything else, just like, you know, we are with the United States and everyone else in Afghanistan. You know, different war, different kind of, you know, motive behind it. But, you know, he was opposed right from day one, and not too many, nobody, obviously a candidate was, but nobody really can say that they were against it. And that was, you know, so you talk about foreign policy, you think of mistakes and, you know, experience of foreign policy, he hit that one right on the head, right? So
yeah, but he's got to be a little stronger about that, because what happens, these Democrats, they always get these advisors that say, move to the center, and hoping to get that 10% in the middle. But the way that Barack Obama could fire people up would be to take some opinions of the way, for instance, the supporters of Ron Paul reacted to his program, and the way that Dennis Kucinich is on the Democratic side reacted to his call. American people would respond to that because they're with. If you take those two guys and kind of make an amalgamation of what they advocated, I think you could set the country on fire politically. But unfortunately, the Democrats are always surrounded by these conservative elements that say, "Oh no, you don't want to do that," and yeah, you opposed the surge. Now you're saying, "Oh, it went beyond our greatest expectations." Well, the surge did not work in Iraq whatsoever. It pretty much the fighting ended for two reasons. One, that the ethnic cleansing was complete, so there weren't even the clashes that had previously occurred, and the United States government, with our tax dollars, essentially bought off all of the insurgents. So we're paying them hundreds of millions of dollars not to fight us, and they probably figured, well, wait a minute, we're creating some casualties among the occupiers, but we're taking some heavy casualties in our community. So why don't we just get on the payroll? So it's but like I say, Barack Obama would do a lot better if he became much more strident in his program, not in his speech necessarily. But all right, Matt, thank you for joining us. Another thing, too, you know, we can't forget about all the scandals of the party in power. You stay in power for a while and all that gets worse and worse. Think about all the sex scandals and all these. These guys are going to be around MC Cain as well, you know, without a doubt. Here, the two-year, $5.3 million investigation by the Interior Department's Inspector General found workers at the Minerals Management Services Royalty Collection Office in Denver partying, having sex, using drugs, and accepting gifts and ski trips and golf outings from energy company representatives with whom they did government business. This is Bush Co. This is Bush Incorporated. This is a corporation masquerading as a government. And what do you say? What the hell is that? I mean, did you ever hear of the Minerals Management Services Royalty Collection Office? I never did. But what's happened? Yeah. These people that were appointed by Bush. Bush loyalists, Bushies, as they call themselves, were put in charge of this was the fox guarding the hen house. And between 2002 and 2006, 19 oil makers, nearly a third of the Denver office staff, received gifts and gratuities from oil and gas companies, including Chevron, Shell, a number of others as well. The Inspector General Earl E. Devaney said the investigations expose a culture of ethical failure and an agency with rife, with riff, rife. No, we're riff. rife with conflicts of interest. So this is the culture that is going to be replicated in an MC Cain administration. Another reason to get rid of these people. Yeah, and listen, I want you, you know, those of you who think that Jalene and I are these like Democratic Party loyalists or you know, big Obama supporters, just for the fun of it, vote for Barack Obama and wait till he gets in and see how we rip him a new one as well.
Right.
Yeah, believe me, we will.
Yeah.
All right, let's see where we are here. Here's Kathy in Southfield. Kathy, it's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for having me. I have a comment and a concern.
Sure.
Comment is, please, folks, think. McCain is now saying he's for change. What did Obama say all along? In 2004, Obama makes a speech saying get off oil in dependency. He includes, we set our sights on getting to the moon. We achieved it. Ooh, what kind of commercial does McCain put out? Oh, we set our sights on getting to the moon. He continually steals from Obama. Even in his acceptance speech, he stated, it doesn't matter who comes up with an idea. It's not all about credit, folks. Well, excuse me, I want the thinking person. Yes, Obama is still a politician, but he isn't quite as...
craven.
Yes, he has not been he has not been in that machine as long, and he's intelligent. He has great judgment. I would go with him first. Yes, he comes up with the ideas. So, folks, step back and think. Look at the campaigns. Look who is slinging mud. Look who is sticking to issues. Think. My concern is, I heard a show on NPR. Unfortunately, I don't remember names. Quote. But there is a big concern about these computer polling places
sure.
that can be hacked. It is interesting that now they're saying the polls are really close. So if it was a landslide for Obama right now, we would question if he didn't win. If they keep them close and the Republicans hack into these computers and Obama loses, it would be like, oh, well, and nobody's going to look into it. I'm very concerned. America we need Obama, even though he's a politician, even though he's not perfect. We've got to get away from McCain. Give this man a chance. Give him a chance.
Well, thank you, Kathy.
Well put. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. You have a good evening. Thanks for joining us on 313-298-WRIF. The five reasons, according to the Yahoo News, so Politico.com. The economic gap narrows. When Democracy Corps asked voters last week which candidate would, quote, do a better job with the economy, Obama had a 50% to 44% advantage, down from a 16-point edge in mid-August. Gallup this week shows a 3-point edge for Obama on the question of which candidate can better handle the economy, down from 16 points in August.
Maybe we should quit paying attention to these polls.
Well, I don't. You know, at one end, let me see. I don't know how we have this structured. Oh, I think the poll, the interview I did about polls with the former Gallup poll editor, I think that's going to go on at 1:30 a.m., so about a little hour and 10 minutes. But I don't understand the function of polls at all. You know what they're good for? They're good for the media. I mean, our guest, David W. Moore, says that. But the media has a vested interest in creating the most excitement of sort of an American Idol setting.
Yeah.
So people will do what? Watch. Watch. That's what they want. They want you to
ratings.
Watch and watch.
Because, means money.
Yeah. And the more intense it gets, the more money that's raised by the candidates, and the candidates spend their money on what? On advertising.
Yeah.
On those same outlets. So they have a real vested interest in a dogfight or a cat fight. Right, let's take another call here. And here's Darren. Darren's in Clarkston. Hi, you're on the air. Hey, Darren, turn your... Okay, you're not listening. We're going to put you back on hold. Ooh.
Uh-oh, call back.
I blew off.
Didn't mean to.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of hosts would do that.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, so I meant to put you on hold.
My
apologies. My apologies, yeah. Here is a call from Ann Arbor. I don't have the name, but welcome to the broadcast. Who's this?
Hello.
Hello, Hi. You're on the air. We don't have your name. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's Liz. Hey, what's up?
Hi, Liz.
Hey, I'm 21, so this is going to be my first, like, national election.
Okay.
And I have to say, I'm really frightened by how the media communicates all this information. It's not about information, it's about entertainment.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You watch these news programs, it's bright lights and exciting music. It's not about content.
No.
It's just about rhetoric and people trying to get sides.
Well,
not based on information.
Let me just run this by you. And that is, I mean, whether you agree with me or don't agree with me, I hope at least you'd have a passing acquaintance with the issues. I don't watch any television to speak of. I didn't watch the Obama speech just because I thought maybe it would be an historic speech, and I don't even think it was necessarily. I don't think it was, actually.
Yeah, I was kind of bored.
Yeah, and I didn't watch any of the Republican and convention, and I don't watch the Sunday morning shows because I find that most of it pretty empty, and it's not valuable to me. If I thought it was valuable to me as a professional that does this for a living, I'd be all over television. I don't watch CNN. I don't watch MSNBC. Sometimes I'm sorry I can't watch Keith Olbermann or Jon Stewart, and people always, oh, wow, you know, he said that. But, you know, I'm able to live without it. And what I depend on are a number of sources. Now, these are sources from the left. I mean, if you wanted to balance it, I'm sure there's probably, I know of some. I'm sorry, I don't even want to give them out. But there's any number of news that you can look at, and then what's good about those, you can read them, and then you can think about them. And you're not being whipped around by the, you know, by what television does to people. So,
yeah. You have to look for the information. If you just watch TV news, like a lot of people do, you're just going to get opinions and people telling you what to think.
Right.
Right. So turn it off.
Yes.
And do some reading, right? Yeah. And find the right sources that you're comfortable with.
I can't.
Go to peterwerbe.com. That's a great place to start. Werbe.
Yeah, and I tell you, I spend so much more time in front of a computer than I want to, and when I can just finally do all the work that I have to do on 4 email accounts that I have to service and everything that I look at every day, and I can just pick up the newspaper, pick up a magazine, or pick up a book, it's like, whew,
yeah,
wow.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Call back and let us know if, you know, any developments in what you're doing. All right. What I mean by that, that sounds kind of crazy, but I meant sometimes people's manner of assembling information changes. And
yeah.
I'm always one. No one's ever said, you know, I really did decide to look at television. Actually, people have, haven't they?
You got a
what?
New TV.
I did. I told you. Yeah. And it is one of those big babies. And all of a sudden I'm looking at it. And my wife says, what are you watching? And I said, it's like South Carolina playing. And she says, what?
because the
visuals are so incredible. So I understand the addiction. She said, shut it off. I said, yeah, you're right. She said, who are you rooting for? I said, neither side.
I don't even know who they are.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. I can't even remember what teams there were. Here's Cody. Cody's in Belleville. Cody, hi. It's Peter and Jalene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, I just wanted to say I agree totally with what you were saying about Bush Co. and what Barack needs to do as far as campaign-wise.
Uh-huh.
But there is one other thing I wanted to touch on as far as Ron Paul goes.
Sure.
I think he's got a lot of great views. He's not influenced by money as much as everyone else. I mean, everyone is influenced by money, but what I want to touch on is the Federal Reserve System.
Sure.
He's the only candidate that will even talk about it.
Yeah,
tell you the truth, that's what is really bending the middle America over the table right now.
You know, I don't agree with that in the slightest. I know that's part of the Ron Paul an analysis of what's wrong with the economic system, and a lot of people that support him, some of them support him for that reason. I mean, look, if it wasn't for the Federal Reserve, the whole house of cards would come crashing down. I mean, they've structured it so that the whole financial system is dependent on this, you know, semi-private, semi-public institution that pumps money into the system and sets rates. Without that, I mean, we'd probably, I mean, right now, everything would probably collapse. I don't think that's a good system. I don't think the Federal Reserve system is a good one. But given the way the system is currently structured, it's probably the best we can do. If you want to do something different, yeah, let's join the revolution.
All right, well, here's the thing. Since it is so privately controlled, those other people that are controlling it can be influenced as well.
Yeah.
No one exactly knows exactly who it is.
Yeah, I think all the governors are known, and the people that are the head of it. And in fact, what's his name? Greenspan. What's Greenspan's first name?
Alan
Greenspan. Yeah, he just said, and he's sort of the architect of all these bubbles that occurred. The guy, when things were going great, everybody said, "Oh yeah, he's a genius." And now people are saying, "What in the hell did this guy do?" And McCain has said he's got to read his book to find out what's going on. So let me ask you this before you go.
He also said the country cannot afford the tax cuts.
Oh yeah.
That. McCain is proposing.
This is Greenspan. Yeah, it's going to go down the drain. So tell me, Cody, how does a Ron Paul voter vote in this coming election?
Honestly, I know he doesn't have a shot, and I'm all for Barack. I think it's pretty much, at this point, lesser of two evils, just like every election.
Yeah.
And voting for Ron Paul, I mean, it's just going to end up going towards whatever he decides on, so, which is probably going to be Barack, but... I may as well go with what I feel instead of leaving that up towards, well, it's Electoral College anyway, so.
There you go. All right, thank you very much, Cody. Yeah, you're right. You are voting for electors in the manner in, even with all the shenanigans of the 2000 election, that Al Gore got the majority of the popular vote, but the electoral vote went to George W. Bush. And it's a possibility that could, I don't know. Some people have talked about the possibility of that happening again. What? Let me see. Why did I? Oh, yeah. Scott in Clinton Township writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Peter, please stop referring to John McCain as MC Kane. This paints a portrait of a candidate that is hip and has street cred. John McSame, which I also called him, is nothing but an out of touch with reality corporate fascist that will destroy our country beyond the point of recognition if elected.
He has a point.
I don't know. I like that, MC Kane. I mean, wait, no one
it
made
does
up...
make him sound cool, though, Peter.
Yeah, but then...
Especially in Detroit, where we have a lot of MCs. Come on.
Yeah, but I would like... What is this guy, spamming us?
Lots of opinions, yeah.
No, but I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,
and we're not talking about...
8. Greg.
We're not talking about Scott.
Yeah, Greg, you're sending us too many emails. I mean, we like it that you're engaged.
Yeah, he's into it. He wants to join the revolution.
All right, okay.
Come on aboard.
All right. Since I kind of slagged him off, what does he say? Ron Paul is a libertarian, loves Ayn Rand. He used to be on Mark Scott's show. We all go back many years. You're right. Thanks, Greg. Peace out. Or peace, yeah. Now, Mark Scott was a guy that was on WXYT when it was a talk station.
I remember.
And was a total whack job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where is he now?
Passed away.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I wasn't being insulting, Greg, but just, we get so many emails, and, you're very passionate about this. Appreciate that. So, where are we? Oh, yeah. Is this, I think it might have been Darren who I... Darren, hi, from Clarkson, you're on the air. Darren, you still have your radio on! Okay, now I'm going to put him on hold.
He'll hear it in a second with the delay.
Al Slayer, could you tell Darren from Clarkson to turn his GD radio off? Or can you say?
He's on it. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to, some people might not like
it. You can just say damn radio.
Yeah. Eric from Redford Township. Hi, you're on the air. Hey.
Oh, did you turn it up?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, isn't this up? And he's on.
Hello?
Hello, hello. All right, let's see.
He's probably on the other line.
Oh, no, I just blew him off. Sorry here. All right, let's do this. We'll be back with the final half hour of Night Call right after these.
I want you all to know.
This is the greatest country in the world.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
What's all this mumbo-jumbo about music?
It's your riff rock the way you want it.
It's time to get real.
Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF for your perfect 10 riff rock songs. Submit your perfect 10 playlist now at WRIF.com.
There's a big computer in there. You like the internet?
It's your call. You can tell us what you want to hear on the riff. Revolutionizing radio. One listener at a time.
That's one first.
The riff's perfect 10 playlist. Submit yours now at WRIF.com.
Then listen for your perfect.
Oh, my prayers have been answered.
101 WRIF. Weekday night at 10 with Meltdown. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4 with a nail in it. Mandatory Metallica. Now, it's your triple play of the mighty Metallica with the big unit. Every weekday night at 10, exclusively from your one and only Metallica station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Last winter, did your home leak warmth like a sieve? Did drafty rooms or cold floors send chills from head to toe? Hi, I'm Bob Dine, owner of Applied Building Science. We specialize in finding and fixing the root causes of heat loss, drafty rooms, frozen pipes, or moisture buildup in your home. Unlike insulation companies, Applied Building Science tests before you invest. Our house as a system approach evaluates your home from attic to basement and wall to wall. We educate you on what's happening in your home and why. Best of all, Applied Building Science installs draft stopping, ventilation, insulation, and crawl space protection products, all in a plan to meet your needs and budget. Put the power of practical science to work for you. Call the Whole House Specialist at Applied Building Science, where we stop drafts cold. Call us today at 248-246-6500, or you can find Applied Building Science on the web at stopdraftscold.com. That's stopdraftscold.com.
Psst. Hey, it's Dr. Dan from the Cherry Hill Dental Center. I know you're streaming Riff. I do too. And I know you're probably at work and have to keep this quiet. But I want to interrupt for a minute to tell you about our incredible Zoom whitening offer. Now through Labor Day, Cherry Hill Dental Center has Zoom whitening for only $2.99. That's right, $2.99. I'm sorry, but our summer Zoom whitening sale only happens once a year. Once it's gone, it's gone. You know, nothing looks better than a beaming white smile next to a golden brown tan. Or maybe you need a smile makeover. Transform your smile and get that promotion or the attention of that certain someone. Get where I'm going with this? Write this down. Call right now or during your lunch hour to schedule your appointment. Call 734-427-2880. That's 734-427-2880. Or check us out at cherryhilldental.com. Get the smile. Get the confidence.
Here we go. Starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections. Run the country into the ground. We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like
welcome back to the final segment of Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. 313-298-WRIF. Jalene Jordan, do we even know what band that is?
I don't, but I know who's doing production for us, and it's Murray Stewart Jones. We want to thank her.
Murray, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good job.
I mentioned Politico.com, and Stephen in Dearborn Heights writes, do you happen to know that Politico.com is a right-wing website? No, I didn't.
Exclamation, exclamation, exclamation.
Yeah. It is a propaganda machine for the Republicans. It is the Fox News of the Internet. It is a very heavy Republican slant and always carries stories either slamming the Democrats or praising the Republicans. I also happen to believe that most of the stories are filled with lies just as Fox News is. For instance, the poll results you read tonight I think are false, simply made up by Politico to make it look like McLame is winning.
McLame? Oh, that's a good one, too.
Yeah. But I don't know. I see things that are useful to me. And, you know, I don't, you find it wherever you can. Like, for instance, antiwar.com, I think it is. If you go to .org, one of them is like a porn site. But or something
really?
Like, yeah, I think it's antiwar.com is a right-wing site. But it's filled with good information about the...
Amazing.
Yeah, so...
Hey, Paul from Redford Township wrote in and said, though I'm a huge Dennis Kucinich supporter, my wife and I and our whole family are going Obama because we need to defeat McCain and Caribou Barbie. Nice.
I like that. Yeah, at 1 o'clock tonight, coming up, Larry Beinhardt, author of Salvation Boulevard, a novel about a Muslim student accused of murdering an atheist professor. He's defended by a Jewish lawyer who uses a born-again Christian as an investigator.
Intense.
And David W. Moore, oh, I got to talk about intense in a second. David W. Moore, former senior editor with the Gallup Polling Organization, who does say it's mostly BS. I saw a screener. What did they used to call that? But in other words, something that we get to review movies before they come. It's called Battle in Seattle.
Okay.
And it's about the 1999...
Oh, the WTO?
The WTO demonstrations. And talk about intense. Woody Harrelson. It shows, actually, like all the demonstrators getting ready to come out against this organization that controls a lot of our economic... our everyday life, our everyday economic life. And then it shows also the Seattle police.
Beating?
Mostly just them getting ready for the demonstrations.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a very intense film. It's going to either be at the Main or the Maple. And hopefully I'm going to be interviewing the director this week, which will play next Sunday. Another kind of goofy movie that I saw this weekend was Burn After Reading, a Coen Brothers movie.
Oh, yeah. Clooney's in it and Brad Pitt, right?
Yeah, and they play roles that you can't believe. I mean, yeah, they're always such romantic heroes and all.
I think it was number one. Yeah, it was number one at the box office.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. We are on strike two with Darren from Clarkston. Let's see how he does.
Oh, we're already on strike two.
Yeah. All right. Darren, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Yay!
Good work, Darren.
I finally got through.
Welcome.
Hey, I was just, earlier you were talking about the abortion issue and about, I was just wondering, do you think that has it, any Christian views, or is there any kind of, religious views that go along with that abortion issue?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's it's a pro-life, so they call it, stance that often goes along with being Catholic in a lot of the evangelical churches, and there's a lot of, a lot of religion to it.
It is rooted, absolutely, Darren, it's rooted in a theological view of biology, essentially. And there's a debate about that. The majority of people support the traditional view that that the humanhood comes about when a baby exits the womb and can live independently. And people are welcome to try to change the view of what constitutes all of that. But in the meantime, let's not have it settled by law. So good. Thanks for bringing that up, Darren. I'm glad you finally made it on to Night Call. Thanks for calling. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And here is Elise. Elise is in Westland. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Elise.
I just wanted to make a mention of the abortion thing as well. Pretty much, if they get rid of it and legalize it, it's going to be like it was in the 70s, where women are going in backyard abortions and bleeding out to death and everything like that. It's getting rid of the whole pro-choice or even the woman's choice.
Sure. Yeah, it's doing more harm to women out there, for sure.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say I've known several people that have gotten abortions, and it traumatized them, but if they didn't have that option, they'd be living lower than the poverty line.
Yeah. One of the ways, and see, that's what's contradictory, because the Republicans always oppose even raising the minimum wage. They're always opposed to unions that raise wages and living standards and living conditions. Really, I mean, if you think about both John McCain and Sarah Palin, they both have campaigned against aiding teenage mothers, on and on like that. So, I mean, the pro-family stuff is just... an absolute nonsense, because they don't support pro-family legislation. And if we had an economic system that didn't put tens of millions of people in poverty, that in itself would reduce abortions, because people, a lot of times women unfortunately make the decision to have an abortion, to terminate a pregnancy, because of economic conditions. The other thing is that kids need sex education appropriate for their age, and they also at some point with parental permission need, particularly if they're going to be sexually active, they need access to birth control. And if you think about Sarah Palin's daughter, if she probably had neither, because
that's
Sarah
right.
Palin opposes that, right?
Right.
But yeah. Obviously she wasn't, there was no conversation about the consequences of sexual activity.
Right. And one thing, Elise, let me ask you this, I just thought of this. If Barack Obama had a 17-year-old daughter that was unmarried
true.
And was
up on stage, pregnant.
Unpregnant. What
can
do you think
imagine the racism that would fly there?
And the Republicans, how they would react to that? Here are these people that are so conflicted about sexuality, that are so condemnatory of people that have made mistakes, like Sarah Palin's daughter has. If it would have been a black teenager, man, they would have been all over it, don't you think?
They would have, it would have been unreal how much they would have been over it. And it's sad how much they target the families for making their choices and prosecuting them for the way that they handle things. But no one focus on the people that are in the limelight, not the people that are, just trying to make it by day by day.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Elise, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. And maybe let's see. Woo. Open line or so has opened up.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was thinking about something.
We have a couple of open lines, 313-298-WRIF.
Here's Mary in Livonia. You got polled today?
Yeah, I got called today and answered a political poll.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It went great. I loved it.
Do you know who the polling organization was?
They did not tell me, and I asked who was... paying for this poll or whatever, and they said they were not given that information.
I wonder, they didn't, two things. They didn't try to sell you anything after, or did they?
Oh, no.
Okay. All right, because sometimes people call you and say it's a poll. And the second thing, did you get the opinion, did you get the feeling, rather, that they were trying to push you into any opinion?
That's why I asked if this was bias, who's asking the poll, and, at first I did, but then they started to give me all the candidates that are listed for, like, your local congressman and stuff like that. So they gave all the names, including green taxpayers and libertarian and all those people. They gave me all those names and said, which one would you vote for if it was today?
I don't know how late you're going to stay up. In about 45 minutes, I'm going to have an interview with a guy who used to be a pollster. And that's one of the things I asked him. I said, everybody that you talk to, you say, have you ever, anybody ever,
ever gotten polled? But
yeah.
I thought I'd better call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never been polled.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm one of those bad people. They call up and they say,
do you have a couple of minutes?
They said, we'd like to, and I say, hey, I don't have any time. Goodbye. Thanks.
Right.
I do a lot of surveys.
Well.
Probably got on the list of people who answer their phone.
There you go. All right, Mary, thank you so much.
Can I bring up the abortion topic?
Sure.
The question I want to ask the candidates is if a woman does have an abortion, what should her punishment be? Should she be charged with murder? Why isn't that question asked instead?
Well,
if the deed was already done, what should you do then?
Yeah. The one thing that is contradictory, when abortion was illegal, it wasn't a capital crime. In other words, if you want to assign humanhood to a fetus and say that abortion is murder the way some of these right-wing whack jobs do, then you would think that both the doctor and the woman having the abortion would be charged with murder, which, of course, they never are. And by the way, in Sarah Palin's world, if her daughter would have been raped, mm-hmm. or if, and I mean, this,
or if she was going to die,
yeah, or if a family
she
member
still couldn't get one,
if a family member would have impregnated her, she yeah. was still opposed to
yeah.
it. Yeah,
or if her health was at risk,
yeah.
if her daughter was, you know, possibly going to lose her life because of her pregnancy, she would not support an abortion. Rick in Milwaukee wrote in and said, didn't McCain
Thanks,
run as a pro-choice candidate in 2000 against Bush?
Yeah, I think he did support it. But, of course, now he's flip-flopped.
Well, he's got to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's a captive now of the political far right.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Here's Jimmy in St. Clair Shores. Jimmy, hi. Thanks for joining us. Peter and Jolene here on WRIF. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Julian. My question, Peter, is, you know those political dolls they have out of, like, Sarah Palin and Barack?
They got dolls out already?
Yeah, like, the, yeah, I saw it on some program. Like, the Palin dolls, what I'm getting at is, it shows her, it depicts her, like, one's dressed like the Matrix, and the other one, she's dressed like a naughty Catholic schoolgirl.
Oh, my God.
And
that's fast.
What I wondered is, do they have to have permission to do those dolls?
Well, no, they do. Well, maybe legally speaking, if someone takes your image.
If Sarah finds them,
yeah,
she's
not going to do it.
That's how she is.
Have you ever seen the George Bush doggy chew doll?
No.
No.
They have that. That's on. I think even at my site, if you can go to peterwerby.com and go to paraphernalia down on the left, I think it's on there.
Because it just doesn't seem to coincide with her conservative views.
No.
Definitely not.
No.
Although, you know. I'm not going to say anything. I was going to go lower than I should go.
Yeah, okay. Don't do it.
I'm rising above.
I know how low you can go.
For sure.
I didn't put it on my site after all, but there was this funny piece on The Onion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it seems so real. They have this newscast how it's possible that the collapse of the anti-Bush paraphernalia industry could sink the economy.
Oh, my gosh.
Because what are people going to do with all those T-shirts and dolls and masks?
I think every year since he was elected, I've had, you know, how dumb are you, George Bush calendar.
Yeah, I've got a lot of T-shirts. Remember that? What did I have? The first annual George Bush Film Festival, anti-Bush film festival.
Oh, my.
Yeah. All right, let's take a few more calls quickly. Eric is calling from Redford Township. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Peter. This is Eric Shelley. I've got a TikTok plot I'm about to hatch. I thought you might like to know about it.
A what?
Yeah, I'm going to twist the arm of my Republican congressman until he impeaches the president.
Well, that's a good idea, but I didn't hear the first thing that you said. What? It sounds like you're going to twist...
That's something plan.
It's a quixotic plot. I am running for Congress
on
Green Party ticket.
On the Green Party?
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, good luck.
Who are you running against if you're in Redford Township?
Thaddeus McCotter, District 11.
Oh, McCotter. Yeah. He's another Bush clone, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a real ball of fun, I got to tell you.
Yeah. Who do the Democrats have up?
Joe Larkin.
Joe Larkin, yeah. Whatever happened to Tony Trupiano, our colleague, our talk show colleague, who just seemed to have disappeared?
Yeah, he came and went last year. I don't know too much about him. Actually, I really didn't even know who my congressman was until I needed him, and then when I went to talk to him, he wasn't actually there.
Huh.
I went into McCotter's office and asked when I could speak with him, and they said that he was in the district, but no one seemed to know where he was.
Okay.
Then I called back his scheduler and said I'd like to know what his schedule of public appearances are. And at first he thought I was with the press and was really willing to talk to me, and then suddenly clammed up when he found out I was just a constituent.
Okay.
Well, that blows.
Yeah, it does. All right, I got to run through these pretty quickly. So Eric Shelley running for Congress on the Green Party ticket on the ballot in Michigan. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, these are going to have to go kind of quickly. Steve from Port Huron, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to know the stand between McCain and Obama on the Second Amendment as far as the arms.
You know, I don't think I've heard either of them enunciate anything.
I saw something today. Obama is, he's iffy on all of these. He's not really said a lot. But
don't say he's iffy. These Second Amendment people will go nuts.
Well, he's not totally for all of it, though, I think. It's like taking guns into bars and things like that.
Well, I don't know, but let me tell you this. Nobody would dare to propose legislation that would significantly reduce the right of gun ownership, and I don't think Barack Obama is.
He's not going to do anything. No, in the main, yeah, he's not.
Yeah. Here is Matt Mattson Trenton. Matt, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Pete?
Going well.
For all the people that have bad things to say about the union, I would just like to say that I just turned 23 the other day. I've been in the union since I was 18. I have two kids, and I bought a house, and I make $80,000 a year. I work my butt off, but we just signed a new four-year contract with United Steelworkers, and we get a $6,000 bonus.
Uh-huh.
And a dollar wage increase as of September 1st, and a 4% wage increase every September 1st for the next 4 years.
Wow, any openings? Where you
yeah, right.
actually, they're hiring people left and right.
Really?
And but the thing is that you have to pass a drug test, and not a lot of people are willing
well,
to
there we go.
On the pot.
There we go.
Okay. back to the serious comment. That is not that one caller said. The unions are all to blame. I mean, why they don't ever see the bosses as being to blame? And for one thing, even if the union, and I don't believe this for a second, even if the unions, we're talking industrial unions, even if unions were asking for too much, it was the bosses that signed on to it. They signed the contract. You know, just like when they make these cars that people don't want, whether it's the 1980s or now these huge monster trucks that they can't get rid of, it was their decision. They're the smart guys. They're the guys that are getting millions of dollars a year, and they're hosted and toasted as being the pillars of our society. And it's their decisions that often have usually they're the guys that are making giving us the answers, making the decisions. So to blame it on people that are trying to get a decent standard of living and who are working hard. I mean, working as a steel worker, you ought to be getting $180,000 a year, to tell you the truth.
Yes.
All right. I thought I could get you on that one.
He agrees with you.
All right, Matt. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. He should get $180,000 a year, A, because of the nature of the work, and two, because of the value that he's producing, which would mean less money for investors. Then they would take their plant overseas. So it's all blackmail, right? Either you accept the wages we give you based on our needs of this ruling class elite, or we're going to screw you totally. Isn't that sweet? Here's Paul in East Point. Paul, hi, you're on the air. Paul. Hey, Paul. Okay, Paul. I think it freaked him or something. Here's Terry in Dearborn. Terry, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
It is such an outrage that we're getting ripped off so bad at the gas pump. It's so obvious there's no competition between our oil companies. My question is there any clue as to why Citgo, which is all Venezuelan, mm-hmm. why they're not selling gas here for $2.50, $3.50 a gallon and just, kicking the teeth in of our oil companies and making them drive the price down?
You know, I don't know why. I mean, the structure of it, I don't think the Citgo refineries, they're certainly not owned by the Venezuelans. They supply the crude oil, which is then refined here. But is Citgo itself owned by the Venezuelan state oil companies? I should know that, and I don't.
That's the clue. I mean, that's the mystery. I think they are. Is the refinery then, is that the filter that all the corruption goes through? Because it's just criminal. It's beyond an outrage. It's totally criminal.
Well,
and no one's standing up for it.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, I've been in Caracas, and I've mentioned this on the air before. Gasoline is 14 cents a gallon. 14 cents a gallon.
So, yeah, ours should be about $1.60,
yeah.
$1.80, somewhere in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Above and beyond that, it's pure greed. It's pure racketeering. It's criminal behavior. The mafia's got to be green with envy.
Now, I don't know whether what this all says. I'm looking at the Citgo site, and I don't know. I guess this isn't really the time. About Citgo, no. Doesn't really. So this is I don't know. I can't get this real quickly. But Sitgo, you know, with all this stuff going on between Venezuela and the United States, they're still this big trading partner. They buy the United States buys $50 billion worth of oil from them
every
year.
Yeah, at one point it was 40% of our oil from Venezuela.
That much?
Yeah. Wow. But that was a few years ago.
Well, I've often thought about that. You know, why doesn't Chavez, who hates Bush and the oil company so badly, exactly what you said, Terry, why doesn't he just say, hey, I'm not going to dollar off our price? Maybe because, well, again, I think I'd have to know more information before I could go further, because I was going to say, who knows, if they have American stockholders for the Sitgo stations, and I know they're independently owned at least, I don't know. Okay, give me something to do over the rest of the week. Hey, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being our last caller. I want to thank all of you for listening and for calling. Jalene Jordan, a pleasure as usual.
Thank you, Peter.
And we shall meet again, same time, same place.
Let's do it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Al Slayer, for manning the phones.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Are you ready to rock?
If you're looking for the best rock in the Motor City, look no further. Monday through Friday, 7 to midnight, I give it to you. Play a bunch of requests. Mandatory Metallica, tons of concert tickets and giveaways as well. I'm back on the airwaves Monday night, 7 o'clock after Arthur P.
Weekday night from 7 to midnight.
Let's rock.
Why not?
On 101 WRIF.
Awesome. Awesome to the max.
Rocks, okay?
That rock.
The party always starts at the Barnstormer in Whitmore Lake, where beer is way cheaper than gas. Get 25-cent drafts with your purchase of dinner Tuesdays through Thursdays. Every Wednesday, high performance and muscle car night, sponsored by Deptula Racing. Drag on down to the Barnstormer for winter sausage coney specials, drink specials, and the chance to win a dyno test.
Harman Kardon Infotainment brings the sound.
Enter the Barnstormer's karaoke contest with nightly prizes. Thursdays, get high on the hog at the Barnstormer's bike night. Right over from your favorite club or Harley-Davidson dealers such as Motor City, Brighton, or American Harley. Enjoy live classic rock music on the Tiki Bar with Buck 75 domestic long necks. There's food specials on the grill and drink specials all evening, and bikers walk right in free. Friday and Saturday, dance to the awesome sounds of DJ Woody and host Chega Man. The Barnstormer, located on M36 just west of US 23 in Whitmore Lake. For more info, call 734-449-0040 or log on barnstormerbanquet.com.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, I was coming in to do this interview, and I heard the results of a poll. The poll said that white women are going to Sarah Palin in droves, and there were different polls at Yahoo that some showed now McCain and Palin leading Barack Obama and Joe Biden, and others said they were just close, and others... And you get it. It's on and on and on. And so how do we make any sense of all these polls, or are they to be made sense of? I thought it would be appropriate to get someone on the air who had long experience with pollsters. His name is David W. Moore, and he's written an incredible book called The Opinion Makers, An Insider Exposes the Truth Behind the Polls. And I say incredible because how many times do we find out what is actually happening inside the poll apparatus? David W. Moore was a former senior editor at the Gallup poll for 13 years. Before that, he was a professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire. He's also the founder and director of the UNH Survey Center there at the university. He's currently a senior fellow with the Kearsey Institute at the University of New Hampshire. He's written two previous books, How to Steal an Election, which we maybe may mention, and The Super Pollsters. He's written for the New York Times, The Nation, the Boston Globe, and lots of other publications, and been on the air as well with NPR's Fresh Air and The Today Show. We reach him at his home in New Hampshire. David Moore, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thanks very much, Peter. I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah. It's kind of confounding what the polls are all about and their accuracy, and one says one thing and one says another. How is the average citizen like me supposed to figure out which of them are accurate?
Well, I think it's very difficult. It's difficult even for somebody who's spent a lot of time looking at the polls to figure out which ones are accurate. My ultimate judgment is that right now, if you take a look at any of the media polls, the major media polls, none of them is actually presenting an accurate picture of the electorate. They all suggest that around 90 to 95% of the voters have made up their mind. Of course, they'll immediately acknowledge that, people may change their minds. But it's just simply not credible that more than 9 out of the 10 voters have actually already made up their mind.
Don't they have an undecided column, though, as well? Don't
they do have an undecided column, but what pollsters do typically is essentially pressure people into coming up with a response. Gallup's average undecided has been essentially unchanged for the past 3 months, and it's averaged about 5 percentage points. CNN recently had a poll where it had no people undecided. 100% of the people had chosen some candidate or another. And that's all a consequence of the way in which the poll question is asked. Rather than ask people, which I think is probably the most direct and most honest way, are you going to vote for, McCain or Obama, somebody else, or in November, in the November election, are you going to vote for Obama, are you going to vote for McCain, vote for somebody else, or don't you know yet? That is a very straightforward kind of question. But pollsters don't ask that. They know that if they ask that question several months in advance and several weeks even, that they'll find a large number of people who would say, I don't know.
Hmm. Well, now,
instead they say, well, if the election were held today, who would you vote for? But the election's not being held today, and so a lot of people who are in these surveys are essentially being pressured to come up with a name, even though they aren't necessarily committed to that name.
Now, the pollsters, the polling organizations, always speak about the incredible lengths that they go to in order to assure an accurate portrait of the mass opinion of the people of this country, for instance, when we're doing it here. Why wouldn't they want to have it reflect more accurately along the lines that your criticisms are in the opinion makers?
Well, there's no way to say for sure during an election campaign whether any given poll is right or wrong. Just as you said, you can see that polls conflict, so they can't all be right. But you don't know which one is right, or if anyone is right. But come election day, the pollsters always want to make sure that their final pre-election poll results are as close to the election outcome, so that afterwards they can boast and say, look, our polls are really very good because they come very close to the election. But by the time they're asking that question, they're asking the polls right before the election, most people have made up their mind. So that typically the polls are not that far off when it actually comes to the election itself. But prior to that time, the pollsters just refused to ask whether people are undecided.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually started by George Gallup in 1935, and I talked with Alec Gallup, who's George's older son, when I was at the Gallup organization, and he acknowledged that when George Gallup did it, he knew that if he asked the question in 1935, 18 months before the 1936 election, that people simply wouldn't know, a lot of people, and that would not be very interesting news. So he just said, well, who would you vote for at the election rail today? And that format has persisted through the past 7 decades, when it really is a very misleading question.
David Moore's book is The Opinion Makers, An Insider Exposes the Truth Behind the Polls. And David Moore, you were a professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire, and then you went to the Gallup poll to become a senior editor. With that, I don't know. To some degree, it seems an odd progression. How does one move in that manner? It almost seems like you'd go the other way.
Oh well, I had written a book in 1992 called The Super Pollsters, in which I gave essentially a contemporary history of the media polls and of the polling industry. And in that process, I met Alec Gallup. George Gallup died in 1984, but I met Alec Gallup, and he asked me shortly after the book was published and when an opening came up whether I'd be interested in working there. And because it was the Gallup poll, of course I was really very honored and pleased to be able to go and work there at the Gallup organization. But what you find there, as soon as I got there, Elmer, I soon discovered that the our polling partners, which were CNN USA Today, really did not want to measure the number of people who didn't have an opinion about a given issue. They wanted to present the public as though it was kind of fully rational, fully engaged. But the truth is, on most public policy issues, somewhere around 40 to 60% of the public is unengaged and doesn't have an opinion. But that doesn't prevent us either from giving them information in the question itself so that we can then ask them about it, or of asking them anyway and essentially pressuring them to come up with one of our responses, mm-hmm. even if they genuinely don't have an opinion about the issue.
Well, David Moore, take us back to your book, Super Pollsters. So this was written, and was did you have the same opinion of the pollsters as you do in your new book, The Opinion Makers?
No, at the end of the Super Pollsters, I thought that despite the fact that there were some problems, we knew that there were some question order effects. That is, you get different responses depending upon the order in which you write the questions, and there were various other kinds of problems that I mentioned in the book. But that overall, I thought the polls genuinely reflected the will of the public. But once I got into it and saw how the polls were being manipulated in a way to come up with a public opinion that was presentable for the news, even if it didn't really reflect what the public was thinking, I began, you know, changing my mind and thinking, you know, we are not accurately reflecting what the public is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best examples has to do with the war in Iraq. Most polls showed that 2-to-1 support for the war going into Iraq and February of 2003. But, and Gallup poll did the same. But we followed up the question of whether people supported or opposed going into Iraq in order to remove Saddam Hussein from power by asking people who supported it whether they would be upset if we didn't go to war, and then asking people who opposed it if they'd be upset if we did go to war. The reason that we were asking that intensity question is that a lot of people just give a top-of-mind response, and they're not so committed to their view that they care, really, whether it prevails or not. And so this upset question helped us to identify it, and essentially what we found is that the public was evenly divided over going into Iraq. 29% favored it, and would be upset if we didn't go. 30% opposed it, would be upset if we did go. 41% didn't care one way or the other. But that wasn't the public opinion that was presented to the readership of the newspapers or on our, radio and television. It was presented as though the public was almost clamoring for war, which was not an accurate representation of the public at that time.
Well, it sounded like you entered the Gallup poll as a senior editor with high hopes and being involved with something consistent with your professional and academic training. And so all of a sudden you came face to face with the hard reality of what it was all about, and you were very critical of it, yet you were there for 13 years. Were you an enthusiast the entire time, how did you survive in there, I guess in a sense emotionally, if you were so critical of it?
Well, I think the one thing I want to make clear is that I think polls can be very useful for understanding the American public when polls ask questions of people about their own particular lives, about the feelings that they have, and even about opinions that they have about various things, as long as they are opinions about issues that the people really genuinely know. So I'm not a person who says that polls are not useful. I think they're tremendously useful and insightful, particularly about the culture of American politics. But little by little, it became clear to me that what we were really doing is mismeasuring the public when it came to issues dealing with public policy, and that we were really manipulating people into coming up with responses. Now, this wasn't a partisan manipulation. It was a manipulation that tried to make it appear as though people have an opinion when they don't. And so I think little by little, this just really accumulated, I would say. My perception of what was happening accumulated over a period of time. And so I became more and more focused upon how we got different poll results by different ways of asking a question and different order in which questions came, and I was very much involved in analyzing that methodological problem while I was at Gallup.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people say that the Gallup pollsters are very conservative, and something like the Zogby poll are liberals, and they often tend to reflect that. I mean, at least it seems to me that you'll find Gallup frequently showing McCain Palin ahead of the Democratic candidates, whereas like Zogby comes up with results that are more salutary to people that are supporting that ticket.
I've noticed that as well, and I know that at Gallup that was always a concern because we did have, I don't think they now have as great a diversity of public of opinion on their staff as they used to have, having gotten rid of CNN and then when I left. But right, but I think as a general rule, I know as a general rule that we were not trying to shade the results one way or the other. But it is true that with respect to many election polls, the Gallup poll tended to be more supportive of Republicans than did other polls. But it's also true that Gallup got excoriated by the Clinton administration when it would show Clinton's numbers early on in his campaign, his approval numbers went down. Of course, the Clinton administration was very happy when Gallup later showed during the Monica Lewinsky scandal that, in fact, which was contrary to what all pollsters expected, that Clinton's approval rating went up. Mostly, I think, as the public reacted negatively to the Republicans' attempt to impeach him. But the point I'm really trying to make is that pollsters, let me just talk about the Gallup poll. The Gallup poll does get buffeted from both sides of the political spectrum. With respect to Zogby, it's a different story because Zogby does a lot of polls for private companies. And when he's working for a liberal group, he'll find what they want. When he's working for a conservative group, he'll find what they want. Gallup and all of the other major media polls tend to avoid, working for private groups or interest groups.
I'm not even sure. Now, I mean, you said you spoke about the usefulness of polls, and I, like so many people, when the polls come out reflect what I believe, I think, oh, those are accurate. And when they come out the other way, I say, yeah, these are skewed. They must be asking skewed questions and what have you. So I don't know. Maybe make the argument, if you would, David Moore, a little stronger about the usefulness of them, because sometimes, like if I see some poll that I disagree with, I mean, it has like a quick depressive effect on me. I think, how the hell can people believe that? And I'm sure the opposite is true with people that have an opposite political opinion for me. So what practical use do they use, or are they used for in your estimation?
Well, let me talk about what I think they could be used for. Right now, we know that they're used by politicians and they're used by campaign pollsters or in campaigns in order to find out what the public is thinking. Oftentimes, according to some political science, they're used by politicians in order to manipulate the public, in order to come up with slogans and other kinds of messages that they think will be received favorably. That's not necessarily a good use of polls. I think polls can, if pollsters were willing to look at the intensity of public opinion, to allow people to admit when they genuinely don't know, I think polls could provide an accurate picture of the public, which would also include people who strongly favor, strongly oppose certain issues, as well as the significant number of people who are unengaged. But we don't do that. And instead, we manipulate people in the poll question to come up with some response, which is why I think we sometimes get really weird numbers. So I'm really, as I put on my website, a skeptical pollster. Every single poll result that comes out, my immediate reaction is, I really want to know more about it. I don't believe it just off the top of my head. It's just, I just really want to look at it in more depth to see whether or not there's real good science behind it, and real good question writing.
The book is The Opinion Makers, An Insider Exposes the Truth Behind the Polls. David W. Moore, my guest, was a senior editor at the Gallup Poll for 13 years. And as he mentioned, his website is skepticalpollster.com, skepticalpollster.com. You can see the link on my site as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. One of the things that people frequently say is, whoever gets polled? I never got polled, and I think a couple of times I've seen people do that in a room. Who has ever been telephoned, and that we ought to get into the use of telephones, too. Who has ever been telephoned or approached by a pollster? And generally, no one ever raises their hand. I have actually been I don't even know what the poll was about. It could even have been sales, because people will say, I'd like to see whether you participate in a poll. I say, no time, don't call back, thank you, boom. So who knows? Maybe I hung up on a Gallup pollster. But that's usually what people say. A lot of people think they're totally fabricated. And they say that, what did they take, like a sample of how many? Like 1,000 people, is it?
Yeah, about 1,000 nationwide. It can be larger. It's rarely much smaller, around 600 to 1,000. 600 is about a minimum nationwide that people will use, but more typically it's around 1,000, occasionally it's larger than that. So the probability, when you figure there are around 200 million adults, more or less, the probability of being selected on any single poll is extremely small. You would think over time that there would be a large number. We did try, and you're going to find this kind of an ironic approach, but we did poll people, asking them whether or not they'd ever been on a previous poll.
Huh. Well, there you go.
And so you kind of poll people to find out if they've been polled before. And when we did that, of course, you realize that I'm sure you realize that it's kind of biased in the first place, because the fact that people are willing to be interviewed could very well exclude somebody like you.
Sure.
You know, the fact that you refused to be in that poll that you said where you just hung up on means that, you know, we would never get a negative response from you if we'd asked you if you'd been polled before. So it tends to be a little bit crazy, but it still showed somewhere around 14-15% of the public indicated that they had been polled in a poll, quote, like this, meaning the one that they were on. But a lot of people have received telemarketing, and it is difficult sometimes to distinguish between telemarketing, which is under the guise of a poll, and, you know, real legitimate public opinion polls. But I guess my response to people who say I've never been polled is, well, you know, it's probably true of around 80% of the people, but it doesn't mean that there aren't real polls going on out there. It's just that there's a low probability of being selected.
Well, we want a representative sample, as they say. Yet, trying to get a representative sample of the United States population, if you think of a white Mississippian and a Dominican Republic immigrant in New York City and an African American in Detroit and a kind of a hip Seattle resident and Southern California, how in the world could you, even 600 to 1,000 people, it doesn't hardly seem to make that real.
Yeah, I know. It does kind of defy our intuitive expectations. But the statisticians confirm that you can, with about 1,000 people, draw, if it's drawn, in order, when I say it's drawn correctly, I mean that it has to be drawn in a way that ensures that every telephone number has an equal probability of being selected, which means basically they run a random number generator, and, you know, you've got all possible combinations of telephone numbers, because they're essentially 10 numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any given telephone number is only 10 numbers.
Well, wait, let me just interrupt you one second, because one of the things I want to get this is extraordinarily interesting to me, and I see that our time is flying. We only have a few minutes left. Most of the people that I know that under 25 do not have a landline. They only have a cell phone. And I'm sure the polling companies realize this, but that means they're not going to be able to reach them. How do they figure that in?
Well, in theory, they could. There's nothing to prevent the pollsters from calling cell phones. In practice, there's only, I think Gallup started it in January of this year, but in most of the companies won't do it because it's more expensive. And they're also afraid that people will be more likely to refuse since we're using their minutes. You know, the respondents' minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, we don't know for sure where they are. I think Gallup takes care of that by asking them if they're driving, and if they're driving, they ask them if they can call them back.
Oh, boy.
But it's true that there are a lot of cell phone only users who are going to be excluded by virtually all of the major media polls, and except for Gallup at this point. And I think within a year or so, within a year or two at most, I would think that the rest of the polling organizations are going to begin calling cell phones as well.
Mm-hmm.
The only legal restriction is doing it is that you can't have automatic dialers call the numbers according to federal law. So a person has to dial them, which is going to exclude a lot of the robo-polls, like Rasmussen and SurveyUSA. But it won't prevent the regular media pollsters from calling people with cell phones.
Now, David Moore, I mentioned at the beginning that you had also written How to Steal an Election. The people that charge that the Bush administration stole the 2004 election in Ohio give proof that the exit polls confounded the final results. And the exit polls have always been pretty right on target. Do you put much in that? I mean, tell people quickly, if you would, what exit polls are and whether you think that that is an argument for thinking something was amiss in the 2004 elections.
I really honestly cannot say whether the exit polls were so accurate that they gave that they showed Kerry winning. As we know, they initially showed Kerry winning, and eventually, of course, they weighted their results to the actual outcome, which showed, of course, that Bush won. What my biggest argument with the major media organizations is that they are refusing to allow the exit poll data to be analyzed by reputable scholars so that they can come up with a definitive conclusion. I do think the evidence is very strong that there were many shenanigans going on in Ohio and that it's quite likely the Democrats won. But I do think with respect to the exit polls, the major media organizations, that is the networks, should allow the exit poll data to be analyzed by reputable scholars so that they can clear up that question. Their refusal to do so, I think, is a real shame to the media.
I think
the national media.
Right. I think I know how you would answer this, David Moore. If someone said, here is a polling company, we want you to set the context for it, and do you think you could construct it in a manner that would reflect reality and would be helpful to the progress of democracy?
I do think we can ask questions that would accurately get at what the public are thinking. I think we have to ask questions that, number one, are objective, which all pollsters try to do, but number two, that are not forced choice questions. They allow people to admit that they don't have an opinion, and then that we follow up and try to find an intensity, a level of intensity, to make sure that they are strongly committed to their viewpoint. I think in that process, we would probably reveal that somewhere around 40 to 50% of the people on any given issue were unengaged, and that's okay. But the rest of the people would have an opinion. We could present that, but we don't. Instead, pollsters try to manipulate their respondents to coming up with a view, and that distorts the reality of what the public is thinking.
Well, thank you, David W. Moore. The book is The Opinion Makers, An Insider Exposes the Truth Behind the Polls. David Moore worked for Gallup for 13 years, so it's all in here. Mark Crispin Miller says of the book, a powerful argument that polls do not merely misinform us, but pose a genuine, if subtle, threat to our democracy. You can go to David Moore's website. It's skepticalpollster.com. Also my site for a link, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Thank you so much for joining me on the program.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this. Weekday nights at 10, with Meltdown is like getting hit in the head by a 2x4 with a nail in it. Mandatory Metallica. Now, it's your triple play of the mighty Metallica with the big unit every weekday night at 10, exclusively from your one and only Metallica station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Hey. it's Dr. Dan from the Cherry Hill Dental Center. I know you're streaming Riff. I do too. And I know you're probably at work, and I have to keep this quiet. But I want to interrupt for a minute to tell you about our incredible Zoom whitening offer. Now through Labor Day, Cherry Hill Dental Center has Zoom whitening for only $2.99. That's right, $2.99. I'm sorry, but our summer Zoom whitening sale only happens once a year. Once it's gone, it's gone. You know, nothing looks better than a beaming white smile next to a golden brown tan. Or maybe you need a smile makeover. Transform your smile and get that promotion or the attention of that certain someone. Get where I'm going with this? Write this down. Call right now or during your lunch hour. Schedule your appointment. Call 734-427-2880. That's 734-427-2880. Or check us out at CherryHillDental.com. Get the smile. Get the confidence.
Attention cat owners. Please listen to this very important announcement about Fancy Feast cat food products.
We know how much your cat enjoys Fancy Feast. We also know the pressure you're under with the price of everything going up all around us. We are here to help. We're PetFoodDirect.com. And right now, we are dramatically rolling back our prices on all 57 Fancy Feast flavors in our store. Plus, when we roll back prices at PetFoodDirect.com, we roll them back not just 1 year, not 2 years, but back to the same price we charged in 2001. So a 71-cent can of Fancy Feast is 49 cents today. You save 31%. Shop PetFoodDirect.com today and save, save, save. Enter promo code PURR for your special savings. That's PetFoodDirect.com. Promo code PURR.
Do you owe the IRS $15,000 or more in back taxes? Are you worried about wage garnishments, bank levies, and IRS seizures? Call American Tax Relief. If you qualify, now you could settle your tax debts for less than you owe. Just call 800-493-8159. American Tax Relief has helped thousands of honest, hardworking Americans settle their tax debts for less, stop garnishments and levies, and remove penalties and interest. Their staff of experts will work hard to get you the best possible settlement you qualify for. With experienced, knowledgeable professionals on your side, you can save money as well as time and stress. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 800-493-8159. American Tax Relief can help you get the fresh start you're looking for. Call right now. 800-493-8159. That's 800-493-8159.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Usually, I would say 90% of the times, maybe even 95% of the time, I interview people that write nonfiction. Sometimes, though, fiction comes my way, and that it grabs me in a manner that I think it can explicate something that we normally would expect nonfiction about. And in this case, it's a book by Larry Beinhart. You may remember him from, it's 4 years ago now, when we interviewed him about his novel, The Librarian, about the 2004 elections and a lot of skullduggery around that. The brand new book is Salvation Boulevard. It's a novel. And Larry Beinhart is best known for as being the author of Wag the Dog. It was published as American Hero, but it became the film starring Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, Willie Nelson, and Woody Harrelson. His No One Rides for Free received the Edgar Award for Best First Novel. And Larry Beinhart spent 2 years at Oxford, England, where he was the Raymond Chandler Fulbright Fellow at Wadham College. And he's written for the New York Times, the International Herald Tribune, the Los Angeles Times, lots of other papers as well and publications. He lives in Woodstock, New York. We're reaching him there. Larry Beinhart, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much, Peter. Always a pleasure.
I'm actually interested in this Raymond Chandler Fulbright Fellow. Raymond Chandler, of course, being the renowned mystery writer of the 20s and 30s, and I think into the 40s. I'm just surprised that they have a Fulbright Fellowship for that.
The son of Raymond's last, I don't know if it was wife, girlfriend, live-in relationship, or maybe even the nephew, took some of the estate's money and set up a Fulbright Fellowship to bring American mystery writers to England and English mystery writers to to America. In alternate years, it went on for 6 years, so there were three of us from each side. And I have to tell you, you know, we have a joke here in Woodstock. You know, you come into town, you see people on the green in tie-dye shirts playing guitars, and you say, yep, it's Woodstock, where it's always 1968. Then I went to Oxford, where it's always 1668.
There you go. And people, of course, always want to know, hey, man, did you see Jimi Hendrix play at Woodstock, or are you a recent...
I've only been here 20 years, and that Woodstock was actually 60 miles away from the actual town of Woodstock.
That's right. That's right. Well,
Jimmy had a house up here. He had a house about 10 miles from me, and Bob Dylan had a house two houses down from me that Don Fagan's in now. And the guys from the band, the ones that are still alive, a couple of them are here. Levon is here, and he plays in town pretty frequently. So, you know, I mean, we still have our rock and roll roots.
Yeah, a lot of music and a lot of art up there in Woodstock,
yeah.
New York as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, still nice.
Yeah. Larry Beinhart, his brand-new novel is called Salvation Boulevard, and it's a pretty complex story about an atheist professor who was murdered.
I'll give you the pitch meeting summary.
Please. Okay, go ahead. Better you than me.
Okay, here we go. And it took me 6 months to reduce the book down to this. I want you to know that. The corpse is an atheist professor. The accused is an Islamic foreign student. The defense attorney is a Jewish lawyer. The investigator is a born-again Christian. The mystery is God.
Ah, I love it. I certainly couldn't have done that. And so you're pulled right into the novel immediately. And of course, as I always say, novels are tough because you don't want to give anything away. But certainly the parameters of it and the basic story are there, that a professor is murdered and a Muslim student, an Iranian a naturalized citizen, is accused. And it's very startling beginning, because when the lawyer and the investigator come in to visit the student, it's clear that he's been beaten up very badly, right?
Yeah. You know, it's, I mean, two things going on there. I mean, one is this whole mindset of the war on terror, in which derives out of fear, and fear gives license. And so you arrest somebody who's a terrorist, and you go, oh, my God, who is he going to kill next? If we could only beat him up and torture him, he would tell us, and then we would save lives. You know, it's the basic paradigm. It comes from most vividly in the TV show 24. And there's a whole slew of people who believe this. And, you know, this is, on a visceral level, it sounds perfectly sensible. I mean, not just 24, you see it on TV all the time. You see it in Law and Order, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If they could just knock the suspect around, they'd find out where he hid the kidnapped little girl and get to rescue her in time. And so, yeah, when they come to, when the lawyer and the investigator come to meet this kid, he's been beaten and abused, and he's terrified. And he's also a kid. He's a 21-year-old college kid. And that doesn't necessarily mean he's innocent. You know, we had the doctor's plot, as somebody in the book points out, in England, where you have, you know, educated people in their 20s and 30s who went on to be real terrorists. So, you know, maybe he is, but he certainly looks like a kid, and the lawyer certainly thinks he's innocent and something's going wrong. And the investigator is an investigator, and he's real skeptical.
Let's talk about the investigator for a bit, because the voice, the first-person voice, is the born-again Christian. And it kind of threw me for a minute. This is published by Nation Books, and generally they are made up of skeptics. So one would think that probably more appropriately the crusading Jewish defense lawyer would be the voice, but you chose a born-again Christian. What's that all about, Larry Beinhart?
Well, you know, the impetus for this book is I woke up one morning early in the 21st century, and I looked out the window, and it was like bad acid flashback of the 12th century. You know, there were holy wars going on, and jihads, and crusades, and the leader of the free world was sending off troops because God spoke to him personally and called him George and said, you know, go invade this country, then go invade that country. And we had this real reemergence of religion as a political force and as a causus belli, or a reason for war and for killing. And I said, this is not only the key political narrative of our current moment, this touches on the real mysteries, the great mysteries. And I became fascinated by it. You know, I mean, is there a God? If there isn't a God, why don't we believe? Why do we believe? If there is a God, why do some people believe and others don't? And how do you reconcile the different stories of belief that people have? And why is this so such an urgent thing that people will both kill and die for it? And I wanted to investigate that. And, you know, I actually tried to write the book a whole other time, and it didn't work. And I realized what I needed was to put a person of faith at the center of it. And there are actually, you know, in a way, two narratives in the book. One narrative is there's been a murder. Somebody's been accused of it. We got to find out if this person actually did it, and that's the investigator's job. And if he didn't do it, who really did it? You know, conventional mystery narrative, and it's got lots of thriller stuff in it. It's got chases. It's got, you know, some sexy women. It's got some funny moments. It's got gunplay and, you know, torturers who are threatening to abuse people and all that good stuff. And then there's another narrative, and it's almost like the book of Job, you know, where on the one side you have the atheist. He's dead already, but he's left his words behind, either through his friends or his books. And on the other side, you've got this megachurch preacher who's a political and financial powerhouse. And they each regard their own motion, their own mission, as a war for souls. And in the narrative of the book, they're in a war for this one soul, this one guy, who is going to go through all kinds of trials and tribulations.
This is the accused.
No, it's the investigator.
Oh, the investigator. Okay. Oh, this is my faithful servant Job.
Yeah, he is the man of faith, and he is trying to serve two masters. You know, one master is obeying his faith, and one is going on this journey toward the truth. Now, he thinks he's looking for the truth about who killed the professor and whether his client is the guilty party. But what he's really on a journey toward is his own faith and the other questions about the existence of God and what does faith mean to him, and can he live without faith, or does he need faith to live, and all these, you know, real fundamental stuff that people are dealing with when they come to issues of religion. And does morality come from religion? Or can there be morality separate? Or can a person of faith be immoral? Can a person without faith be moral? I mean, and which to me I find very exciting stuff. And I would like to think, as a disciplined writer who's writing a book that is a mystery and a thriller meant to entertain, you know, can I make that vividly dramatic as opposed to talking didactic, which I'd like to think I succeeded in doing. That's where the book comes from, and those are the levels on which it operates. And you can read it, you know, strictly as entertainment, or you can read it and say, yeah, I'm being entertained, but here are some really interesting ideas, and I'd like to think about it.
It doesn't get much better than that, actually. I'm only, let me see, 29 pages into it. I interview about 100 people a year, so there's no way I can read all the books. In fact, I would say I read very few, but I enjoyed your last book, The Librarian, and so far I've been drawn into this one. I have to tell you, if this wasn't from The Nation Books, and I didn't know you, Larry Beinhart, and I saw, like, down at the bottom, it says it says Larry Beinhart can discuss the pressing social issues that brought him to write Salvation Boulevard, how atheism fails, how agnosticism leads to incoherence, particularly those, I'd say, oh, this is going to be some religious book, an attack on atheism. I don't even think I'm going to interview him. I have my prejudices, like everyone does. So, but are these these issues that you're confronting, are these also ones that you're confronting in yourself?
You know, they're more, to be honest about it, I came from a comfortably atheist position. Okay, I didn't have any. And as I've gone through my life, I've encountered people who have a great deal of faith, who have a spiritual nature. And it didn't make me religious, but it made me curious. And it made me try to understand this. And I think possibly because I'm a novelist or possibly because I'm trying to make sense of things, I wanted to understand it sympathetically. And I think the failure of what's called the new atheists, who are very like the old atheists, like Richard Dawkins, who's a brilliant man, and Harris and Chris Hitchens, is that they are so incensed at what they see as the excesses, the limitations, and the failures of the truth claims of religion, that they get stuck there. And they can scream and yell as much as they want, and the dialogue stops there. You know? It doesn't make a dent, either on the people who believe, which is not so much the issue, but into entering a dialogue where, because religion is not going to go away, and faith is not going to go away any more than, say, drinking alcohol is not going to go away, and attempts to prohibit it, as we had in communist countries, like attempts to have a prohibition of alcohol or drugs, are expensive, require violence, and are doomed to failure. So there's got to be a way to transcend that and move to understanding so that you can take what is of value in religion. And clearly, no matter what Christopher Hitchens says or Richard Dawkins says, to a lot of people, there's a lot of stuff in religion that is of great value, and they're not going to give it up, okay? And separate that out from what is destructive and truly dysfunctional about religion. You know, I mean, right now we're in the middle of a political campaign, and on one side we got people, a Republican Party that is a creature joined like two amoebas becoming a new creature with the religious right. I mean, I won't say that the Republican Party is the religious right or the religious right is the Republican Party, but there is a real melding there. And the Democratic response has been, wisely or wrongly, I don't know, in terms of immediate political objectives, but in terms of long-term political objectives, disturbing, to say we are people of faith too,
mm-hmm.
and our faith is just as faithy as your faith. And you get this spectacle of all the candidates going on TV, almost literally getting on their knees and pandering to this religious impulse and swearing that if they get into office, they're going to run things according to principles informed by their faith. And, you know, if we look at the last 8 years, one of the, you know, real clear lessons should be that faith is not necessarily the best way to make practical decisions in a secular world.
Well, no. I mean, I always say, one nation under God, Iran. You know, more importantly, the United States Constitution says no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification for office. And
now we have de facto religious tests.
Exactly.
You are required to attest to your religiousness and the depth of your religiousness in order to be elected, at least to national office.
Let's go back more to the book. The book is Salvation Boulevard, a novel.
Yes, let's mention that several times.
All right, by Larry Beinhart. A good place to go online is LarryBeinhart.com. Last name Beinhart. LarryBeinhart.com. It'll also be on Peter Werbe, Werbe. .com as a link there. And I have a tendency, which I'm going to ignore, to defend Richard Dawkins and the rest of these atheists who have actually gained prominence in the era of what many would call religious hypocrisy, that rather than being quiet faith and using religious beliefs for good works in the world, that people have said it is they who are carrying out the work of the Lord. And I don't think that's settled well with lots of people. I think the Richard Dawkins and the Christopher Hitchens of the world have brought a lot of atheists or at least agnostics, people who wonder about it all, out of the closet. And to that extent, I would say it's good. And I guess I don't share your view that they're quite as shrill as you make out. But I could see how they could be interpreted as that.
Well, like I said, I admire Dawkins immensely. And Chris can be very funny.
Yeah.
But I think that, and I also agree with you, that they legitimized being able to say, yeah, I'm an atheist, and I have good reasons for it, and that's nothing to be ashamed of, even if that means you won't let me marry your daughter or son, as the case may be. That's the minority group that parents least want their child to marry.
Exactly. In fact, there was a poll that said that people would rather have their daughter marry a Muslim than an atheist. And I'm thinking,
right. Well,
I don't know whether that's...
I think that's fascinating.
Fascinating, yeah.
I admire them for really opening the dialogue and taking those stands. And yet, in their works, and differently in each one of them, I think there are limitations. And I think in order to make progress, we got to kind of find the next step. Because it's an impasse. And it's the same impasse that there was in 1745 or 56 when Voltaire was writing.
Sure.
And when the French Revolution came along. You know, on one side there were the adamant atheists who said, this is a load of horse manure and let's throw it out of the house. And then there was the vast majority of people who said, that's interesting, I'm going to church now and pray. So we have to find a place where the people who need to keep going back to church and pray can do so without then saying, okay, now I've left the church, let me go kill somebody.
Right.
You know, and it's like finding the place where, you know, okay, people are going to drink. Okay, let's accept that, because we found out prohibition doesn't work. Let's find a way to not let them get behind the wheel of a car when they're drunk. Okay, let's have people have religion, and if somebody has a little too much religion, please don't let him get in the pilot seat of an airplane.
Let's do this, Larry Beinhart. I've just looked. I mean, this is so interesting to me that I didn't realize how our time is flying. We have about 3.5 minutes left. We're talking about Larry's brand new novel, Salvation Boulevard, published by Nation Books. And you mentioned Voltaire. I have on my website, peterwerbe.com, right at the beginning, a quote from Voltaire. Anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices. Can you, this is a tough question, can you relate that to your book, Salvation Boulevard, your novel?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's about. That's a great quote. I love it. If it was, I'm going to steal it from you, except that it's not yours.
Right, yours. Go ahead.
And the other thing is, you know, I'm hoping, like some of the people you've referred to really start a dialogue here. I really want people to talk about these issues. I think they're really important. And one of the things that I hope is working on my website is that people can make comments and people can become part of that dialogue. So either get the book or get the book and go to LarryBeinhart.com. And if people have feelings about this and want to express themselves, it's one place they can do it. Another place is on Peter Werbe.
Yeah, well, but again, that quote, some of the best people I know personally are very deeply religious people. Some of the worst people I can conceive of, and I'm not even making just allusions to the current president, but throughout the world, some of the people doing the worst things in the world do so wearing a religious mantle or under a religious mantle. And they seem to, at least the people that are active, who knows about the people that say nothing and do nothing bad to others, but the active ones seem way to out, the religious active ones seem to way outweigh in negative acts those that are using religion for positive good. Of course, well, we might not see those people as well. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say they're more noticeable.
Yeah.
People who kill people, especially kill hundreds and thousands of people, are very noticeable. Again, you know, and I think there should have been and there should be now almost a national dialogue, a national project. We should get 10% of our national defense budget assigned to trying to understand religion and faith and why that leads to violence and war as well as good.
Mm-hmm.
This should be really one of the leading topics of our national conversation.
Well, friends, don't just stop by picking up Larry Beinhart's Salvation Boulevard. Go back a bit, get Wag the Dog, get The Librarian. It was written about the 2004 elections as a novel, but I think you'd still enjoy it. The writing is good, and the subjects that it addresses are beyond just pot boilers and page turners, which this is as well. It's Salvation Boulevard. You can go to Larry Beinhart. That's B-E-I-N-H-A-R-T. LarryBeinhart.com. There'll also be a link on my site, PeterWerbe.com. As usual, Larry, Len, let's not wait another 4 years.
I'll try to write quicker.
It's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Riff Cyber crew members, log on now and correctly identify the screenshots of hilarious TBS comedies for the chance to win a flyaway trip to attend the TBS Comedy Festival in Las Vegas, where you'll stay at the Rio All Suite Hotel and Casino, home of exotic, uninhibited fun in Las Vegas. It's all courtesy of Sierra Mist Free. Laugh more and worry less in 101 WRIF.
That rocks.
Motor City Steals and Deals is dropping prices. To help you save more money, visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and click on the Bargain Bin logo to see the unbelievable deals. Get your certificates to local businesses for more than half off. That's right, more than half off certificates. Kick off your savings with a Mastercase Karate Certificate. Add to your wardrobe with merchandise from Leather Depot. And indulge in authentic Mexican food at Rio Grande Mexican Restaurant. So, head to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com now, because steals like these won't last forever.
Not all heart doctors are the same. Only an interventional cardiologist can perform angioplasty to save your life during a heart attack. So when you come into the ER with chest pain, where is the interventional cardiologist? On call, and has to be paged to come into the hospital. That's why hospitals take close to 2 hours to start your angioplasty. Until now. Now there's Cardio Team 1 at DMC. This is Mike Duggan, and in the August 7th Free Press, the other hospital said they couldn't match Cardio Team 1 because it would only matter to 3 or 4 heart attack patients a week, and it wasn't worth it. Not worth it? At DMC, having top interventional cardiologists at Harper and Detroit receiving on-site 24 hours a day has cut heart attack response time in half. What if you're one of those three or four patients? Do you want your interventional cardiologist page or ready and waiting for you? DMC Cardio Team 1. Make sure your heart's in the right place. Go to Detroit.
Hello, I'm Governor Jennifer Granholm. The Michigan Department of Human Services is making it even easier to make your voice matter. Now you can register to vote at any DHS county office across the state. To find the nearest DHS office, please call 211 or visit www.michigan.gov/DHS. Take a stand and make your voice matter. Register to vote today.
Sponsored by the Michigan Department of Human Services and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
Experience all the fast-paced action and fun of wheelchair basketball when Detroit sports stars from the Pistons, Lions, and Shock take on your favorite radio and TV personality. It's the 7th annual Celebrity Wheelchair Basketball Games to benefit the Rehabilitation Institute of Michigan. Tuesday, September 23rd at U of D Mercy's Callahan Hall. Tickets are only $8 for adults and $5 for children. For more information, visit CelebrityWheelchairBasketball.com.
Massive and expensive equipment marks the professional radio station.
101 WRIF.
Such as whiskey glasses mounted on a cake tin.
Everything rocks.
live and pop-up free since 1997.
At WRIF.com.
What it does is it increases the blood flow.
101 WRIF.
And WRIF. HD1 Detroit.
Everything that rocks.